Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, guys? It's Boy Benny. Yesterday was a landmark day in press freedom and journalism, citizen journalism, when the House Republicans released all of the January 6th footage. And what has it proven? It's proven that we were right. It's proven that January 6th was a setup. It's proven that cops acted as tour guides, escorting peaceful protesters through the building, entrapping them, showing them around, taking photos with them, unleashing them from zip ties and handcuffs, fist bumping them, and then they all left peacefully from the building. It shows that the narrative of January 6th is completely and totally farcical, that it's fraudulent, and that you have been lied to, ladies and gentlemen. This is the largest bombshell story in American history because so much has happened because of the lie that was January 6th. Now ask yourself, why did it take 3 years for this footage to be released? And here's what happened. Speaker Mike Johnson said, we are now releasing all of the footage. This happened on a Friday afternoon. We are now going to give all access to any American citizen the footage of January 6th. You can go into this specialized portal, you know, effectively, and you can go look at 40,000 hours and clip from it what you will. Take from it what you will. You're allowed 10 clips a day. You can go request clips till the end of time, till kingdom come, till Valhalla, right? And so people have been doing this, and what have people been finding? They've been clipping images like this and scenes like this of peaceful protesters walking down the hall, of people being escorted around the Capitol building by cops, people being fist bumped by cops, this man getting zip tied, his zip ties effectively cut, apparently he was restrained, cut, and then fist bumping the police officers. The entire narrative is fraudulent. Everything you've been told is a lie. The cops were part of it. When are they going to lock the cops up? I don't know. The cops on the date of January 6th said this. They said that they were being set up. The police officers, as soon as J6 started popping off, said, wait a second, this is all a setup. Hold on. Look, we're understaffed. We're undermanned. They wanted this thing to fail. Watch. Everyone across the internet is making the same point, which is, why did the January 6th committee not release this footage? Why have you been lied to by Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney and all of the corporate press about this? Why did it take citizen journalists to actually uncover footage like this? Why? Because they needed to protect a narrative that every person that entered the Capitol on January 6th was a dangerous terrorist insurrectionist. Sorry, guys. Definitionally, insurrection is the attempted armed overthrow of the government. Does this look like an overthrow of the government to you, or does this look like sightseers wandering around peacefully inside of the Capitol building? That is precisely what it is, and they threw people in jail for 20-odd years for this. By the way, you can see in multiple clips police officers effectively escorting people through the building, bringing them into the building. J6ers have committed suicide. There have been 5 people, to our count, that have committed suicide because the federal government will not tolerate an argument in court that the police officers opened the doors and led people peacefully into the building. But that is precisely what you see in these clips. The media needed a narrative. They needed a narrative in order to attack Republicans as violent extremists, because all they had for till the dawn of time was left-wing violent extremism. Left-wing violent extremism at the White House, left-wing violent extremism inside of every single protest in Washington, D.C. for all the time that I lived there for 15 straight years. Every violent protest was a left-wing protest. I was physically assaulted, spit on at these protests. My family was put in danger from these protests. I saw that with my own eyes. I saw them burn down the White House. I saw them attack cops, attack security, but did nothing. The media did nothing. They must have a separate narrative because they needed to lie to people to say that Donald Trump was a dangerous president. Donald Trump had only ever delivered good results for the American people. They needed to have their color revolution, and that's what this was. That's what this was. Clip after clip, tape after tape, image after image, video after video that is leaking out of this is showing that the, not only that, the press were literally sitting there waiting for this to happen. They, an incredible thing that's popped off here is that you can see in one of the clips, journalists inside of the Capitol building standing there taking photos, like waiting in a line as though they were like witnessing something that was pre-rehearsed. Ladies and gentlemen, like the real question here is how many feds were in the audience, were in the crowd, who was breaking the doors, who were the breach teams? Once you had a breach, it would have been like there's chaos. People are going to wander into the building. So how many federal agents behaved criminally that day? We know for a fact that there were undercover police officers in the crowd. We know for a fact, we have their body cam footage, that these guys behaved in a criminal manner, encouraging people to go into the building, encouraging people to go up the scaffolding, encouraging people to commit crimes because many of these people have been charged with trespassing. Their entire narrative has been utterly and totally and completely destroyed, obliterated, immolated. And now it's time for some hard facts. The only reason they did this is in order to kick Donald Trump off the ballot. In multiple states, they're trying to remove Donald Trump from the ballot for what? Insurrection. Even though Donald Trump said march peacefully, and all these people did follow Trump's orders and march peacefully. In multiple states, Donald Trump is being charged. Donald Trump is being persecuted federally for inciting an insurrection in Washington, D.C. They're going to try and nab him on that. They needed to try and put Donald Trump in prison. That's what this is all about. The big lie. This is the left's big lie. Their big lie was that January 6th was a violent insurrection. And now it has been utterly and totally demonstrably proven that police officers assisted, helped, and acted as tour guides, fist bumping the peaceful protesters that wandered through the building. Now, people may clip this out of context. There was hooliganism that happened on January 6th. We covered that. In fact, an Antifa BLM undercover LARPer, MAGA LARPer, is going to go to prison. Caught a case yesterday, 7 felonies. We are not. If you punch a cop and if you hit a cop, you should go to jail, period. I don't care who you are, what your political stripe is. What we are saying is that the vast majority of people on this day were not only acting peacefully and as like effectively tourists inside of the United States Capitol, but they were helped in by the federal agents in the crowd and by the cops standing at the building. And the real people who need to answer for all this are people like Nancy Pelosi, who allowed the Capitol building to be breached, who refused to take the phone calls from the chief of police, and who refused to accept the National Guard offer from Donald Trump. You cannot be an insurrectionist if you're offering 20,000 National Guard troops to protect the building. That's impossible, definitionally. So this is what we've learned, ladies and gentlemen. You have been lied to. We were right the whole time. The truth shall set you free. What's next?
Yes.
What's next, ladies and gentlemen?
I don't know.
We must win, and we must hold accountable these people who have been fraudulently pulling hoaxes and lying to us and who will do anything to try and maintain, to try and keep power. They are sick scum.
I've seen it. All these tapes on the inside people are playing. I don't see any problems. We've got a lot of people in the switchboard. If you'd like to join us, push one, and I'll get you on as soon as I can. I feel like crap, so as soon as Cinnamon gets here, I think I'm going to head for the sack. And so I don't know. I think I put Pianchi on, and Gene, I think you're on.
Good evening. Yeah. I'm sorry you feel horrible.
I have had
You too, David. You and Otis need to go to bed.
Yeah, Otis has beat me to it. Yeah. I haven't felt this bad in a long time. I can't remember how long. Anyway, anybody watch these tapes? Gene, I know you've been busy on the UAW stuff, but these people are just walking down the hall, and the cops are just standing on the side, just watching them. Some fist pump. They had one cop you know, had to act like he was arrested, and then they cut off his, you know, those ties, and they fist bumped and walked on by, and you seen the cops outside saying, "We were set up. This whole thing's a setup." And they were beeping because the guy was...
Wow.
Yeah.
No, yeah, you're right. I'm kind of out of the loop a little bit because of UAW stuff, but...
Yeah.
Interested to get updated.
Wow. I'm looking forward to tomorrow, then. I'm already set it up for 2 hours, so... Okay, so.
Well, Johnny, if you don't feel well, you should call the show and just cut it off, and everybody take a quick Thanksgiving holiday? Yeah.
No, we can't do that. Let me get, okay. I think this is Joseph, and I think this is Lori Ann. I think.
Hello, Donnie. Yeah, you sound like crap, my friend. I'm sorry you're sick.
I'm all right. I mean, I think this probably...
Pick rifle up and stand post.
Stand post. Did you...
Ain't no time to get sick. We're at a war.
That the Army is going to ask these people back that they... throughout the Army or military for not taking a shot. Did you read about that?
Yeah, I heard something about that, actually.
Yeah. Sarge, I think you're on, too. I think that's you.
It's John Doe, Don.
Oh, hey, how you doing, Joe? You're not Joe.
Well, John Doe sounds kind of like dope.
John Doe, yeah.
To be lumped in with a Joe, whether it be Montana Joe or Joe Goodson, Gibson, that's still an honor and a privilege.
Oh, there you go.
Well, nice guy. Kind of like Joe Ray Me Doe.
Hey, yeah, I got in on C-SPAN's Washington Journal yesterday and got to talk.
Who was?
I did, for the whole nation. You know, whenever you ever listen to C-SPAN's Washington Journal in the morning?
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I called in. They actually let me go on. They cut my mic, though. If you go to C-SPAN.org and then you look up Washington Journal for Friday the 17th, and then you look up the part 3 of the open forum, I'm like 1 minute and 22 seconds into that file. It's only a 17-minute file, but the first caller called in was right before me, but I'm the second one, like 1 minute and 23 minutes into that file. And they shut
all
me
right
down just soon as they heard me say the Congress represents us like a pimp represents a prostitute, they cut me off.
Oh, man. Well, you should know you can't talk like that on corporate media.
You know you're on a 10-second delay.
Are you sure you weren't talking about the
UAW? They got him on a half-hour delay.
Okay, you guys go ahead for a while. I'll sit back and listen.
CNN, or what's it called, John Doe?
Oh, C-SPAN. You know, C-SPAN's Washington Journal. On Fridays,
okay,
they have open forum. So if you go to c-span.org, then you go to their Washington Journal, you know, that show.
Yep.
They have open – then you go to open forum. If you just get to the Friday, you know, November the 17th, 2023 page, it'll give you a list of different segments and files.
I got
you can list.
Yep. Yep.
And it says open forum part 3.
Yeah, I got part 1 right now. I'm getting there. But I see it, though. November 18th.
Open forum. No, 17th, Friday, yesterday.
Oh, okay. So I got today's then. Oh, they do it every day, this thing?
Yeah, no.
Wow.
Well, the Washington Journal is Monday through Friday. they, well, I don't know, maybe it is on the weekends too, but I just know on Friday they have open forum, so you can call in and talk about anything you want to talk about.
I got it right here, part three. I got it right here. Okay, let me see if I can get it played. I'll see if I can
and
get
1 minute
on
and 20, 1 minute and 22 seconds into it, they let me talk.
Okay.
And that's for Friday the 17th you got, Joe?
Yeah, I got it. I'm playing around.
Play it from your system.
Yeah, I'm going to try to.
Democrats 202-748-8001 for Republicans and Independents.
You have 1 minute. You were at the first one, right?
8002. You can always text us your thoughts at 202-748-8001.
I'm the second caller, a minute and 22 seconds in.
City Democrats want.
All right, this guy's the first caller.
Hey, thank you, Pedro, for taking my call. 60 years ago, I'm 80 years old, by the way, 60 years ago on Thanksgiving, my commander-in-chief was assassinated, JFK. He prevented a war with Russia. They wanted to put missiles in Cuba. I was in basic training at Fort Leonard Wood. Okay. Anyway, I was a night cook, and I was in the Philippines, and I heard it on Armed Forces Radio. So I want everybody to remember JFK. He prevented a nuclear war, and he told Cuba to get, or told Russia to get their missiles out of Cuba, and then he was assassinated by Lee Harvey Oswald.
No, he wasn't.
And that would be 60 years ago. I have a newspaper that was printed that day. It was a nickel. It was a Dallas paper. Okay, that's all I wanted to say. I sure appreciate it, and everybody have a happy Thanksgiving. Okay.
Republican line from Ohio. This is John. You're next.
Yes, thank you, Pedro, for taking my call. You know, the United States Congress, both houses, Senate and the House of Representatives, have contempt for we the people. Our United States Constitution, Article 1, Sections 9 and 10, says there's no title of nobility at the federal or the state level. And then Article 4, Section 2 says the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens of the several states. And then any one of us calling into our congressman or senator trying to exercise our First Amendment right, or our First Amendment inalienable right of redress of grievance, you know, Congress shall make no law abridging the right of the people to petition their government for redress of grievance. So they are committing extrinsic fraud, and they have contempt for we the people, destroying the legal effect of our private property. The self-governing of you is your private property. Self-governing of me is my private property. When they commit extrinsic fraud by denying us our will to be mutually and reciprocally included, enacted, codified, they've made us a second-class citizen, representing us like a pimp represents a prostitute.
Okay, that's John there. We're about the privilege or the resolution that was expected during that political session.
You got to say everything pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, John. As soon as I said that last part, they cut me off quick. Boom. That was it.
Go to the airport and see if you can reserve a flight. They probably got you on a no-fly list.
Oh, is that why all the helicopters and airplane drones were flying over my place today?
Hell yeah.
He had his hand on the switch the whole time.
Damn.
Oh, man. Good man, John Doe.
See there, y'all. We know somebody famous.
Good
now.
Job.
You know what we could do?
Oh, my
have
God.
A bunch
you
of
also the... did a bad thing, like mention the Constitution, too, John Doe. So I'm surprised that they even let you mention any part of the Constitution.
I know.
Here's another idea I've thought of. Pick a show, any one of you guys a show, and get a bunch of us to call in on the Friday for open forum, and just whenever they let us on the line, you say, hey, remember this number, Saturday night, 347, 324, 3752, or, you know, 657-383-0616. And then everybody that's listening, the millions of people, they're going to Google that or, you know, query it in a search engine and figure out what that number is all about. And you can just say that number and then say, hey, join us Saturday night for a town hall get together, you know, or discussion, whatever.
Let me see if I got it. Hang on a second. hold on for a second.
Pedro, for taking my call. You know, the United States Congress, both houses.
I got it, right? That's it? I can't hear very
yep,
well.
That's it.
All right, I'm going to save that.
Yeah, we need to save that for a commercial.
Yeah. He's never talked that fast in his life. He got it all. Way to go, John Doe. Awesome. Awesome.
Hey, all of you guys letting me come on your show and listening to you guys talk, I've pretty much polished that over the last 7 or 8 years, especially from Joe Gibson's show.
Yeah.
I only say that because I kind of bumped into Joe's show first a long time ago, and then Montana Joe introduced me to you, Donnie.
Oh, I'm glad he did. I'm glad he did. We got a lot of people.
You know,
or push one on your keypad. I'll get you on. Okay, go ahead, Bianchi.
Yeah, I just got through entering that in my diary. I'm at the patriotic speech. Yeah, I entered in my diary that I listened to the most outstanding patriotic speech I ever heard.
There you go. Mm-hmm. I'm going to post that on Facebook.
Okay, guys, I'm not feeling up
it's
to
like,
this. You got to
get it got really quiet.
Yeah, please.
Not quiet. Well, I do know something about Michigan, though. The judge is allowing Trump to be on our ballot. They were trying to keep him off our ballot in Michigan.
And Colorado, too.
Yep, and Minnesota. Boom, boom, boom.
Yep. Now remember,
trying to keep them off the ballot, and they lose.
Don't forget, I told you, the American Center for Law and Justice are fighting that for Trump. I don't know if Trump's given them any funds, but I know they've made it a strategy for their law arm to go around and attack whatever state tries to keep him off the ballot. They're fighting it from a constitutional standpoint, and they're winning.
Well, I mean, we know it's going to be Trump and Biden. We know that. I mean, but I just think that with these 11 million plus people that have crossed the border, I just cannot see the votes. They're going to have to rig the election again or the vote. We just definitely don't have the votes. I mean, you saw what happened in the municipalities elections a couple weeks ago. Democrats won everywhere pretty much. So it's the numbers just are not there anymore.
That's why I stand on the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution, because as long as they want to say survival of the fittest, the majority get to be the dictators in charge, you're always going to have a group of people that are being left out and disenfranchised. And whenever you don't listen to them, they scream. Like Vivek Ramaswamy says, if you don't listen to them, then they scream. Whenever you don't, you know, listen to their screams, then they start tearing the place down. And that's what we're doing to each other. We want to isolate everybody and make them go by our own view, you know, whatever our world view is, and say that's the way it's supposed to be. And I'm guilty of that to a point myself. So I have to be challenged from time to time to, you know, say, hey, am I letting these people live their pursuit of happiness as long as they're not doing any harm to others or encroaching on others' rights and privileges, immunities, and, you know, protections?
Yeah, but John Doe, you're not going to make everybody happy. And there's no way, there's nowhere on planet Earth or in this universe, I think, you're going to make every single person agree on an issue. There's always going to be somebody left out. There's always going to be somebody who's going to disagree, no matter what. I mean, if we all agreed, we would be in utopia. I mean, we would just be heaven on earth. I mean, whatever, you know. No, not everybody's going to agree. We're always going to have somebody disagreeing.
Right, but that's why you have the Constitution and understanding that as long as you're not doing any harm to others or encroaching on their rights, privileges, benefits, and immunities, then you should be free to do it. But whenever you have groups of people, for example, I mean, naturally, if I want to say, oh, you can't drink alcohol, well, you guys are, that drink alcohol are going to say, no, you can't do that because I'm not hurting you by drinking alcohol. And I could say, well, yeah, you are, because I don't like the thought of you drinking alcohol. Well, that me and my little pea brain perspective about, you know, what I don't want to do for myself shouldn't be a standard that you have to live by. You get to discern or determine your own pursuit of happiness. And as long as you're not doing me any harm or encroaching on my rights, privileges, immunities, and protections, then why should you not be able to drink alcohol or do whatever other thing you want to do?
I can say, what about people
lying and cussing and using four-letter, you know, curse words all the time.
All right. Well, what about the people that say, what about the people that say your vehicle, your cars are giving off carbon gases and you're hurting the environment? And I don't want to breathe that dirty air, so I don't want people driving cars no more.
Yeah.
You're hurting me. You're infringing on me.
That's a good point. And we do have laws that are probably not perfect, and we may need to still revisit that because I know there's a lot of people in my family have suffered from asthma and different kinds of allergies and stuff because of that. So within reason, I'm an advocate to, hey, clean air. But also there's got to be a point where we can all, and don't get me wrong, I am a bit idealistic. So therefore, I need people to help bring me down to practical world level sometime. But at the, but I'm going to still argue for the right for everybody to live free and breathe clean air. If that means we got to go back to the horse and buggy, then hey, let's go back to the horse and buggy. Ain't going to hurt me to walk, get some exercise. But that's kind of impractical.
Well, wait a second. Yeah, but I work 50 miles away. How am I going to get to work every day? I got a family to support. You know, what about that?
Yeah. Exactly.
Now you're taking away my income.
Yeah, what are we going to do with the volcanic eruption that spews sulfuric gases in the air and blackens the sky?
Brother John Doe, I have something I'd like to address to you, sir, if you don't mind.
Hey, Sarge, come on, brother.
Hey. Okay, look here. John Doe, I got to admit one thing, man. You have made me consider many of my opinions long and hard because, after all, the Declaration of Independence does have that phrase in it, the pursuit of happiness, and that is not insignificant, and you cannot ignore that even when you look at the common law black-letter text of the Constitution, and I'm not when I say what I'm about to say. But I think to some extent, even though, like I said, John, you've made me reconsider many of my opinions and helped me, in fact, to put a finer point on them, and I really appreciate you doing that. But what you made me realize is how remarkable the Constitution really is. It's a marvelous mix of somewhat libertarian ideas and a regard for the police power, meaning because the framers were not libertarian. The framers believed in the police power, but they believed it should be restricted and enumerated. Now, let me give an example of what the libertarian or semi-libertarian aspect is. The Bill of Rights, you got a right to free speech. Second Amendment, you got a right to keep and bear arms. Third Amendment, no troops to be quartered against your will in your house. The Fourth Amendment, no unreasonable search and seizure. The Fifth Amendment, you cannot be compelled to testify against yourself. Sixth Amendment, you got a right to speedy trial. The Ninth Amendment, you know, I'm going to not go there because that has to do with police power, because that's when you get into police power. I'm talking about the Ninth and the Tenth Amendment. Okay, but anyway. Now, that's the libertarian aspect. On the other hand, the Ninth and Tenth Amendments give the people the right to legislate in any manner that the Constitution does not forbid the states to legislate in. That means anything. So that means if it is not forbidden to the states by the Constitution or by some, you know, I know a lot of people don't like to hear this about some judicial ruling. Well, the people can legislate in it, which means if you get a majority vote and a legislator on it, the minority is not going to get what they want. And I think that's what you're having trouble reconciling. The fact that you're going to have to resort to persuasion to bring other people to your point of view, and not you cannot maintain that many of these things that people decide to legislate in their states are in and of themselves a constitutional right because they are not in the original intention and understanding of the Constitution. I hope I haven't stunned anybody in the silence. Now go ahead, man. Yeah, respond, please.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and it works both ways. Iron sharpens iron, and I appreciate you putting that out. And that's part of the whole reason we need to have these conversations, and I want to stimulate them, because there's so much ignorance, myself included, about all of these issues and how we got to where we are in understanding the Constitution, that the majority of the masses' ignorance is what's leading us down this black hole that's causing all the problems, and we're, you know, getting worse and worse. But the point that I'm always stuck with is we either have integrity and veracity in the rule of law or we don't. Don't forget, you mentioned the pursuit of happiness in the Declaration of Independence. I like to step on a little bit earlier in the first paragraph. You assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. That speaks to the fact that every human being that's party to the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution is independent, self-governing, free person. No other human gets to dictate your burdens and encumbrances and obligations of any kind, even governing, because you own the self-governing property of you. If you take the Constitution and say the minority are going to have to just suck it up, they're not going to get their way. So now we have tyranny of the masses. We no longer have anybody being protected. We've just circumvented the whole principle that we're independent, self-governing, free people. Now we've gone back to survival of the fittest. We've got a group of majority that gets to say we're the privileged, we get to dictate to the minority, and we're no longer equal, even though the First Amendment, I mean the Article 1, Sections 9 and 10 of the Constitution says no title of nobility at the federal level or the state level. Article 4, Section 2 of the United States Constitution, the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens of the several states. Just violated that, threw it out the window. How many other do we have to look at in the Constitution that we just nullified?
Yeah, but John,
so
we've got
a problem. We've got a problem in that regard. Thank
but John,
you.
But I think you're looking at things as though there is a social zeitgeist fossilization and nothing ever changes. That's not true. Once upon a time, abortion was forbidden in 48 states of the Union, almost totally. Look what we got now. Once upon a time, you couldn't smoke marijuana in any state. Look what we got now. Once upon a time, you couldn't walk across the border without going through strict immigration procedures. And look what we got now. So I'm just saying, things change. And how do they change? People persuade others to their point of view. That's where you get your First Amendment right to go to others and importune them to your point of view. So don't look at things as though they're static forever and you're forever going to be in dismay that your point of view cannot prevail. What you have to do is, if people are legislating in accordance with the Constitution in those things that the 9th and 10th Amendment allows them to legislate in, at times you're going to have to concede you've been defeated, and then you have to work on exercising your First Amendment right to persuade them to your point of view. That way, there's not really a tyranny of the majority, nor is there a tyranny of the minority. There is a continuous, ongoing, never-ending attempt to persuade others. And I believe that's the way the framers of the Constitution intended. They wanted an ongoing discussion about everything. The only things they wanted a clear consensus about was amending the Constitution. That's why they made it as difficult as they did, with three-fourths of the legislature having to ratify what two-thirds of Congress and the Senate sends to the states, or having a constitutional convention to do it. That's the only thing they required an absolute consensus on. Other than that, everything else not forbidden to the people in the Constitution is up for grabs. And you got to remember, it's always that way. It's a continual, never-ending process. Don't don't despair. Just keep trying to persuade people. But don't say you got
yeah,
a constant
look at the privilege
to these things.
Look at the privileges I've got that have developed. No matter the race, creed, color, or skin color, no openly gay is going to teach my kids. And I mean that. They're not going to do it. It's progress.
Okay, but look, let me use your own argument to, toward you, Sarge. You're always saying the system is the way it is, and therefore you use the system in order to change it. Well, the Constitution, Article 1, Sections 9, Clause 8, no title of nobility shall be granted by the United States. Article 1, Section 10, no state shall grant any title of nobility. Okay? So therefore, we have no title of ability. There's no chain of command, there's no rank and file, no one group or one person is any higher up or lower than anybody else. We're all independent, self-governing, free people, like the Declaration of Independent States. And then that's already on the books. So now we either nullify that by amendment or like Pianki working with the state of convention, or we do it some other way. But if you try to take away the right of the citizen of being a independent, self-governing, free person by Stockholm Syndrome or other kind of sleight of mind scam trick, then it's just a fraud. You're not allowing that individual person to have their will mutually, reciprocally enacted, codified, and ratified as an equal citizen. You're saying they're less than you, or the majority is saying they're less than you. Well, now we have an integrity problem with the rule of law. So we've nullified it all. So we got to get to back on track with how to maintain the rule of law. Otherwise, you're just going to have everybody arguing about what's right and wrong, and we're going to finally say, screw you. You don't want to let me have my will mutually and reciprocally included? Okay, fine. They're going to give you lip service, and then they're going to stab you in the back. That's why a lot of people in Vietnam like the fact that their sergeants and stuff lipped off to them while they were, you know, in certain situations, and they get into the battle. They can shoot them in the back of the head or in the back and not worry about it. That's just, part of the way the world works. That's not going to help us move forward.
I have witnessed in the last several years that being thrown out the window. In the verbiage that's used in the description and reports, how they have castigated and demonized the white male, using such terms to their convenience and also to stir up hype like white supremacy. Hell, you got that going on with your own elected official. When somebody announced somebody and say, this is Congressman such and such, when they announce and say to someone that this is a person of whatever rank and file, that is giving them some sort of nobility. And the news media is hyping up with the words I just got through describing. I ain't never seen so much attack on the white male in the last 2 or 3 years. Hell, I was starting to get jealous. I said, you're leaving me out.
You know what, man? I'm going to tell you, John Doe, I got to take exception with the idea that we're self-governing. Yes, of course we have liberties, and we govern ourselves to a great extent. But to say we're self-governing is would deny the idea that the framers, and the framers, they used this term when they were talking in the Constitutional Convention. The police power, and the police power is not guys with badges, strictly speaking. It is that set of regulation and custom and law that has to do with passing measures that are sufficient for the health, safety, welfare, and security of the general population. That's what the police power is. The framers never intended that there wouldn't be a police power, particularly at the state level. I mean, they literally use the term police power in the Federalist Papers and in the discussion in the Constitution. They were not trying to create a state of semi-anarchy where everyone decided for themselves what their liberties and their encumbrances ought to be. They said they would have a framework in which they would be altered, changed, abolished. After all, the Constitution is not, the original Constitution has been amended 27 times to include the Bill of Rights, which is the first 10, and 17 subsequent amendments. It's been amended 27 times. So it's not static. Neither is the idea of what we're allowed to do or what we're allowed to say or what we're allowed to believe or what we're allowed to be able to exercise. That's not static either. But it does require the ability to persuade people to your point of view, provided it's not one of the immutable, inalienable rights outlined in the Constitution. Everything else is fair game for discussion and modification. And that, yes, that means some people are going to get their feelings hurt if they don't get their way. But that's just the way it has to be if you really believe in a democratic republic. Note the two have to go together. We've got a republic that has democratic elements, even though it's not a democracy, but certain elements of it, such as the right to vote, such as the right to petition and all that stuff, those are democratic elements, but it's a republic. Let's not forget that. A republic. That is a form of government.
But, so,
yeah.
A republic is a representative form of government. When you're a representative, from a legal standpoint, you have fiduciary agency relationships to their trust operation. Whenever the people who get elected to office go into office, they are levied with being our manager and administrator of our private property. The self-governing of you is your private property. The self-governing of me is my private property. If they go in and abuse that by not allowing us to have our will mutually and reciprocally included in all the rules, laws, process, and procedures that they pass, they've exercised coercion, undue influence, duress. How many more do I need to list? So you've circumvented the rule of law and made it survival of the fittest.
I think that's really an unfortunate way to characterize what we have here, because that would mean that what you are claiming then is that the republic in the way it's formed and the way the Constitution is written is essentially tyranny for anyone who cannot get exactly what their idea of liberty is. I don't believe that that's what this Constitution of this country is.
No, I agree with that last part of the statement. The point is we don't all get what we want. We get what we all are willing to accept, in the sense that as long as I'm not doing any harm or encroaching on your rights, privileges, immunities, and protections and benefits, then I should be able to live and let others live.
Well, here's what I think I want you to consider. Well, here's what I would like you to consider then. All right. Well, here's what I'd like you to consider. This country came into being by an exercise in rebellion, in revolution. So it's clear that, they were looking at some of the great philosophers of the time, like Aquinas, who wrote Summa Theologia, and other natural law philosophers. And one of the things they believed was the right of human beings was a natural law right of rebellion. Now, I believe in that. I believe that rebellion is one of the natural rights of human beings if they feel compelled to rebel because what they are up against is intolerable, insurmountable, or whatever. Just as long as you understand there are consequences once you embark upon that avenue. There are consequences for rebellion. And even though it's a natural law, and like the natural law, the philosophers of the natural law spoke about it, you got to understand there are consequences to exercising that natural law right of human being. So ultimately, you do have that option should it be simply intolerable in the manner in which your fellow citizens have decided to organize society. But again, I just want to caution that should be an absolute last resort.
Well, yes, there are consequences. The consequence is this, is that once you get rid of your tyranny, now you've got to put together the new thing that you wish to be ruled and governed by. It's not going to be easy. But one thing, you don't have that tyranny over your head. I'm willing to sacrifice the time that it's going to take, the hours, the days, the resources in order to put together something that I didn't like in the previous tyranny that I was experiencing and put things back the way we would think it would be. And another thing, I don't like sitting down at the table to discuss and compromise, because when you compromise, you get up from the table with a whole lot less than what you had when you sat down at the table in the first place.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I have not, I guess the word is foregone, the notion of revolution, because everything I see around me is getting so bad, I'm starting to say to myself, hey, I understand why the framers and the founders rebelled against King George. So I'm not saying that it's necessarily a bad idea. I'm saying it's an idea that is fraught with consequences, and I mean enormous ones, and let's not embark upon it lightly.
Well said, and it should not be embarked upon lightly. The point of it is, too, though, if we're going to basically give lip service to the tyranny of the masses, then are you willing to be in the minority?
Well,
are you going to seek revolution and rebellion in order to make sure you're a part of the majority?
What I'm identifying right now as incipient tyranny, and I believe that's what we're really facing right now, not so much as actually realized. It's incipient, certainly, because we see signs of it everywhere. And, you know, I don't necessarily think that a revolution is absolutely necessary to stop it. It may come to that in the future. Right now, I think there are ways to either ameliorate it or end it, and I think we should exercise those options first.
Well,
I do think the tyranny is incipient. I do think it is.
I see this. Here's the thing. You got those on the left that want to change everything to their benefit and want to maintain the cohesiveness. Then you got those who say, well, change what you want, but we're not going to be cohesive. We're going to draw our lines here. Now, I'm favorable to that. I say let the fools go ahead and do what they want to do. If you want to kill your babies, go ahead and kill them. And you want to eat them, eat them. But I'm drawing a line right here. That means that you stay over there, and I'm going to stay over here. They don't want to see that. What Lincoln done, I think, was wrong. Technically, it was. Lincoln had no business telling Indians that they couldn't have slaves. They was a sovereign nation. They had no damn business telling the states, look, I divorce you. It's like telling the wife she's got to stay with an abusive husband. That's ridiculous. You stay over there. I'm staying right here.
Yeah, did you hear that, Sarge? We shouldn't have all of
that. Yeah, I heard that, and that I think that's one of the reasons we got sovereign states. Because obviously, Utah and Idaho are not like California. So, I mean, there are enclaves. There are refugees from this incipient tyranny we look at all around. And let's not forget, again, the beauty of the federalist scheme that's in the Constitution. I thank God that where I live right now is not like Illinois. I thank God every day.
Sarge, part of the concern is that majority of people, and I would say you even fall in this same group, and I do too, don't understand how to get the judges and the courts and the people in the positions of Congress to represent the kind of Constitution you're alluding to, so we get defrauded time after time again. Just like Pianki said, they stay over on their side, and we stay on our side. But that ain't the way they want to do it. Just like Pianki said, everybody, in my opinion, wants to force everybody else to accept them. Everybody wants to be accepted. Let me finish. Thank you. I'll say I'll yield when I'm done. The neo-Nazis don't feel like they're being represented, and they feel left out, so they're arguing to make sure that everybody has to accept them the way they are and their life, way of life. Queers, homos, faggots, all them groups say they are being left out, and they demand, or the trans whatever group, They say that they're being left out and disenfranchised, and then we got a big group of black Americans that are, well, sometimes it's even white people that are crying racist, and that's just another word for them saying that they're feeling disenfranchised and left out, and they want to force the rest of the society to accept them. Well, I may not have to accept them, but you can't make, you shouldn't be able to make me accept them. Let me, like Bianchi said, let me stay on my side of the fence or in my little area, and you stay in your area. You live your pursuit of happiness and do nobody harm. I live in my pursuit of happiness. But whenever you start trying to force me to bow to your nonsense, then now we got a problem. I'm going to have to fight to tell you to get off my back.
Article 1, Section 8 gives the federal power. There's a balance of power there, John Doe. So I see what Sarge is talking about. The implied power, okay? So you have implied power there between the states and the federal government. It's like Sarge is saying, everyone is, it's not, as long as they're constitutional rights, what rights are those that are not violated? Now, it's not every single right, you're not being happy. That doesn't qualify.
Rights. It's inalienable rights. We don't have constitutional rights.
Inalienable rights. What are those? They're addressed in the Constitution. Right to free speech, right? Second Amendment, right? But it's not because you don't like a policy or a procedure or something that was voted upon through the elected representatives that the people elected to represent their views and policies to implement in their towns and cities.
No, wait. Think about the law. You own the self-governing of you. Amendment 5, you know, the Fifth Amendment, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Due process of law, you have standing because you have something to win or lose. When they pervert the standing of the process, that's called abuse of discretion. That's what they're doing to you on your private security job thing. It's a abuse of process, abuse of discretion. They're getting away with it because not enough of us Americans know how to argue the issue. So therefore, this claim that, you know, Article 1, Section 8 gives them this power. Well, you just denied you your power because you were owner and joint owner in unity of all governing, because your private property is equally important to anybody else's private property. But if they get to start dictating against your will, leaving you out, committing extrinsic fraud, you're a second and third class citizen. They represent you like a pimp represents a prostitute.
Well,
they're getting their way.
But John Doe, nothing can be deemed illegal unless it is expressly made illegal by virtue of law. That's why what they're doing to Donald Trump is so wrong. It is not illegal to petition government officials for redress of grievances. When you believe there's election fraud, you have a right to talk to your election officials and tell them about it. You have a right to do certain things, to consult with advice of counsel and get advice of counsel and act upon that good faith act of counsel. That's not supposed to be illegal. But what we're looking at is people who are deeming mostly legal acts to be illegal. Look, if murder was not in a statute, even though we know morally murder is wrong, if there's not a statute detailing murder, you can't be prosecuted for it. That's what our constitutional system says. It's got to be made illegal by a positive act. You can't negatively impute illegality because you think it ought to be illegal. And that's the point we're trying to make. Wait a minute, hold on, one more thing. When people get, they're being given due process law, assuming everything's on the up and up, not like what's going on with Donald Trump, assuming everything's on the up and up, they are getting due process of law in accordance with laws that establish illegality. And then the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the person they are prosecuting is guilty of that illegality. So that's your due process, John Doe. There it is right there.
Where all that goes wrong when they run to a judge and then they take what the judge say as holy. Judges do not make laws.
Yeah, no, but the Tenth Amendment, though.
Judges do not make damn laws until people say, I am not going to do it, like the governor of Mississippi said when the court said you need to establish a black voting district. That's a bunch of bullshit. Now you're going against the very tenets that you say that you stand for, and that's non-discrimination, non-segregation.
Traditional reserve powers, including regulating, like, trade, are within the state, establishing local government and conducting elections, stuff like that. That's within the state's power. The state, that's called the delegated. That's delegated by them. It's not delegated by the national. We have to have representatives that are elected. And, again, I just don't understand. As long as we're not violating those individual rights, for instance, like your right to free speech, those are not being just use as that one example. As long as you're not being told, but you have a responsibility when you have your free speech. You can't go out and say certain things, right? You can't threaten somebody because you want to, like we were talking about pollution in the air earlier. Just because you feel like something is violating your rights, John Doe, doesn't mean it is.
Well, agree with that general statement. You can go out and tell a person, I hate you. I don't like you. Ain't nothing wrong. It's not illegal to do. And your representative is supposed to represent you, but your states don't call your representative back to the carpet and read them the Riot Act. When they leave, they gone. They say, it's like telling mama, we gone. We ain't coming back home. No, the state's supposed to control those congressional representatives, whether they congressperson or U.S. senator. Supposed to call them back to the carpet. If you look at any voting district for a U.S. congressperson, it consists of numerous state districts. That means that the people that's controlling your state legislature is also voting for that congressperson. They have control over them. But, Joe, they don't institute those controls like they should be doing.
But now, here's where I agree with you, John. I agree. I don't know if you agree with this exactly, but I'm kind of gathering this. I agree that the government that governs best governs least. So I would like to get rid of all kind of laws so there's no basis to potentially oppress anybody. I think about 30% of laws that are presently on the book, and that's a rough estimate, ought to be abolished. There's no need to have them. They're bad laws, not necessarily unconstitutional, just bad. So I think what we need to do is try to give a government that governs least and, given that it has less to be worried about, can govern better. They can concentrate on governing better.
Well, you know, 90% of what you consider laws is nothing more than rules. Congress didn't vote on them. They're rules that's coming out of the opinion of somebody that's operating ahead of an agency like Title 26, the IRS. You go through that mountainous pages of rules, Congress didn't vote on hardly anything there. There's something that some person that's ahead of the IRS, the head of alcohol, firearm, tobacco, thought of, and all of a sudden now it's put in the position of a law that you got to abide as that's Congress or your state legislature voted on. That's where, in fact, lies the problem, or one of them.
Yeah, one of them. There's many others. A lot of the people, myself included, don't understand all of the details, and so therefore we're guilty, or those that are in the know about the details. I'm going to just say Sarge is not more knowledgeable than I am by far, in my opinion. He can at least speak a lot better than me in that regards. But when it comes to the understanding of the integrity of the foundation of how we the people have the rule of law work in our governing, I'll fight to the end of the finish. The misprision is what we're all guilty of in one degree or another. The failure to carry out a public duty, such as the duty to properly carry out a high public office, the failure to prevent or report a crime, the crime of concealing another's crime, including misprision of felony, misprision of treason. This is basically, we the people are the owners of our governing. And this system of governing is put together to help support our continued experience or experimenting of finding a more perfect union. When any one of us or any group of us tries to tell any one or other group that you do not get your will mutually, reciprocally enacted, codified, and ratified because the majority is going to dictate survival of the fittest is what you're left with, anarchy. You've just nullified the fact that anybody has the privilege, right, or authority to determine anything because you own the self-governing of you, so therefore your ownership rights provide you the exclusive authority and jurisdictional power over all burdens and encumbrances of you. Otherwise, we're just a bunch of hypocrites playing a mind game, scam, mind scam.
Some of the rules that we are living under are hypocritical, and I give you one in particular that I just detest. That rule is called short-term capital gains, which is put in force by some idea out of a IRS agent. That means that if you got the skills, the talent, if you have went and studied and done all the things that you need to do, and some people even say you're lucky, if you got the ability to take a large amount of money out of the stock market in a very short period of time, well, your tax on that should be no more expensive than if you invested long-term. It should be looked at as income. You shouldn't be paying twice or two and a half times as much as you would if it was just looked at as income. That's ridiculous.
Well, I tell you what, John Doe, I understand that you speak in general terms of the sort of tyrannies that you think are being imposed upon you. And oftentimes you do speak of them in general terms. Can you give me a concrete, very specific example of what you think is the most egregious offense against your idea of individual liberty and the ability of you to control your own burdens and encumbrances? What would you say is the single most egregious offense against that? And please be very specific.
Why are you asking the single most egregious?
Well, pick any one. Pick three or four.
Because, you know, all
I just
of
want
us,
to get an idea. I just want to get a concrete idea of what it is you're referring to that offends you so.
Well, if you don't mind,
well,
I can name
me,
one. I can name
wait.
One for me, for you.
Okay, go ahead, Pionki. After Pionki.
I tell you one, and that's the ability of a parent to take his child out of a public school district and have the money follow the child rather than stand there in a deplorable condition and money going to waste.
I agree.
That's one.
I agree with that one.
But see, here's the thing I'm trying to get across. Pionki is telling you what he doesn't like about a particular rule or law or statute or case outcome that he doesn't like. But what I'm trying to get everybody to understand is when they pass that rule and law and Pionki says, no, it's not going to work for me, and they say, tough, we're going to continue to leave it up, and you're going to have to suffer the consequences of it because the majority of us agreed. They just nullified their own rights, privileges to dictate anything because they took them away from Pionki and made him a second-class citizen representing him like a pimp represents a prostitute. So therefore, they are not worthy of the authority to dictate anything either.
But how are they to know that this is so a priori? I mean, before the event, how are they to know that a law in which they are passing that is seemingly according to the Constitution and the understanding of the framers at the time of the ratification of the Constitution? How are they to know that this is the sort of law that fits that definition that you just spoke?
I saw how they do it today.
Wait. Please, he's addressing me. Please let me respond to what he's addressing to me. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you should go first, Pionki. I thought he was addressing me.
It's simple. It's because they pass laws without allowing the public to have the opportunity and a proper time to scrutinize it. That's how. You go to bed one night thinking you're free. You wake up the next morning, goddamn, I can't do that no more.
But it's even a step further than that. For the simple fact that we do have in the First Amendment to the Constitution, Congress shall make no law abridging the right of the people to petition their government for redress of grievance. And like I said earlier on the Fifth Amendment, you know, you have the no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So even if they do put forth that law, when you contact your congressman and you're saying, hey, that don't work for me, you're exercising your right of petition for redress of grievance. If they deny you remedy, which is another word for redress, then they've committed extrinsic fraud against you, and they've destroyed the legal effect of your private property. So even if they don't tell you ahead of time and they pass the law, because in 1770 or 1787 or 89, whenever the United States Constitution was ratified, or supposedly ratified, communications did not allow them to have that quick reply from the constituents to make sure. So, but they provided it in the First Amendment, redress of grievance. So therefore, once the rule of law that was passed is known by the constituent and they say, wait, that's infringing on my pursuit of happiness and I need a redress of grievance, then they honor that. Otherwise, they're committing fraud against the citizen.
Well, we have to remember, though, John, that at the time they ratified the Constitution, there was a widespread phenomenon that we're not at all familiar with today to the extent that they were back then. Remember, delegates to the Constitution had to go back to their states and tell them what they had been privy to in the Constitutional Convention. And there was the people met in town halls. And it's not like in TV where they have a town hall every 2 months or so, some town hall meeting. They had town hall meetings every week. And the people would come there at the town hall. They'd sit down. They'd argue about it, mainly the men. They'd go back, tell the people in their family or other people. The word would be spread through a network of people who had very close social ties. So they were really, considering the primitive state of communications at the time, they were pretty well informed, particularly in the cities, about what this was all about. So I don't think there was a dearth, an absence of knowledge of what the Constitution was going to be. I think in many respects it was actually more extensive than the dummies you see walking around today who don't even know who fought on what side in World War II. What did the United States fought in World War II? France? You know, I mean, you hear this all the time. I think in many respects, people at that time were better informed about political affairs relative to the kind of communications network they had than people are today. So they did understand to a great extent what was at stake in the Constitution and what was being offered to them.
But the point is every legitimate United States citizen or American, every person that falls in under our umbrella of American, has a right to self-determine the governing of them. Otherwise, all of this is out the window. It's just smoke and mirrors, Stockholm Syndrome, mind scam. And so Pionki makes the great point that once the law was passed, and then he turns around, finds out the next day he can't do what he used to be able to do, well, now we have to really think about the fact that, well, if this issue that was passed that's stopping Pionki from doing what he used to do, well, was it legitimate or not in the sense of was the action allowing Pionki to harm somebody or to encroach on other people's rights, privileges, immunities, and protections and benefits as an owner, equal owner in governing? If not, then that ruling of that law being passed, Pionki should be able to contact the congressman and the senator right then and say, nope, this is against my pursuit of happiness. You're depriving me of my ownership rights and destroying the legal effect of my private property. You know, remand that or abolish it, annul that. Otherwise, you got to prove that Pionki is guilty of something. He's innocent until proven guilty. And if that law stands, then they are committing fraud against Pionki for not.
So wait a minute. So you're saying then that you have due process right against a law that is in the process of being passed, hasn't even been passed yet, and you're saying that the potential passage of that law amounts to a denial of your due process right?
I say that's you pretty much. I give you the example. Obamacare. No. Obamacare. The case in front of the court was whether it could be under the Commerce Clause, but that dummy, and they let him get away with it, said no, but it could be a tax.
Yeah. Okay, that was sophistry.
If a white woman wants to sit in a tanning booth, hang on for a second. If a white woman wants to sit in a tanning booth and get tans, why in the hell should she be taxed more? Donnie is with the UAW. They got a damn good welfare insurance plan. So why should they, payments that they gain from them when they file a claim, why should that be looked at as income? And also, if I don't want to be a part of commercial insurance, why am I taxed when I do my internal revenue tax filing? Why do they tax me more if I don't have insurance? That's a bunch of bull crap.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, Bianca's got a really good point there.
Oh, my God.
Now, Bianca is saying what these people do, these dirty, no-good, low-down bastard legislators of ours, when they try to pass shit in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning, and then they cram it in a 2,500-page bill, and then you got some idiot speaker of the house who's halfway senile herself talking about, well, we have to pass the bill to see what's in it. See, that kind of thing, now I am 1,000% with that. I do believe that sort of thing, without full public disclosure of what they're trying to do, does amount to a denial of your rights, and even in a certain sense, figuratively, not literally, amount to a denial of due process of rights. So I'm with you on that one. But I'd like to go back. I'm certainly with Bianca on that one. But I'd like to go back to you again, John Doe. And that is, again, so you're saying that an act that an individual feels is a denial of their rights, an act that is passed in broad daylight with plenty of public discussion beforehand, allowing an opportunity for public discussion and commentary, you know, weeks and months in advance of its passage, and it passes, and after this, it passes through the legislature, and with popular support, in the state, you're saying that if you don't like it as an individual, if you feel it violates your personal liberties, you are saying that amounts to a denial of your rights, and it should be considered null and void.
What's assumed in your statement is that we're ruled by democracy; the majority wins. Two wolves.
Well, in some things we are. In some things we are.
No, that's not a representative republic. That's a corrupt mind scheme. But Joe Gibson has been trying to
make a statement. You got one representative per 10,000 people or so. Every one of those 10,000 people doesn't agree with the other 10,000. But he is the representative for the people in his district, but there's 10,000 of them with differing opinions.
That's why things that should not always be done. Just because you can bully people and take advantage of using the government as a weapon to force it on them doesn't make it right.
Well, We've already agreed that. Well, we already agreed that just legislating doesn't make something right. We've already conceded, I certainly have, that much law is bad law. Even if it's constitutional, it's still bad law, and it shouldn't be. And people should go do whatever they can to repeal it and get rid of it. But again, that's the nature of the beast.
Well, you know what makes it bad is when you have legislature protect themselves from not being able to be recalled and turn around and impose these bad laws. Like up there in Minnesota with their school district where they're going to lay off, fire white teachers with more seniority and experience and keep the black ones. That's totally wrong. Like you got out there in California where they're not going to require math, saying that math is racist, requiring math as a requirement for graduation. I think the same thing is up in Oregon. Somebody makes – that's bad. But see, when you make those type of suggestions and laws, and in the and before that you put in place where the citizens can't rise up and petition and get your butt out of there. They say, no, it's illegal. You cannot recall me.
There you go.
That's there.
Also,
when this stuff was created, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the First 10 Amendments set forth the rights, protections under the law of the Americans. But those rights come with responsibilities, obligations that citizens are expected, just common sense, expected to perform. You know, I mean, you have to become an active and engaged in your citizenship of your country. So, I mean, are you harmed by that legislation, John Doe? If you're harmed, then obviously, then it would be violating your common law rights as a citizen under the Republic. But if you're not harmed and you just don't like it because it's an inconvenience or you don't think it's right, then no, then that would go against everything and what the principles of what the Constitution was, the framers thought, by having a responsible citizenry.
That's true. Okay, the encroachment of my right is being the fact that all of us are equal owners in governing. I own the governing of me. You own the governing of you. If you are omitted from the decision-making process, that due process of making sure what the rules, laws, processes, and procedures are going to be, they've just committed extrinsic fraud against you and destroyed the legal effect of your private property. Do you understand
that? But you're
saying
we can't elect people. Then we can't elect representatives then.
Yeah, but wait a minute. John Doe, wait a minute.
Because you weren't my mutual assent. We mutually pledge our lives, our fortune, and our sacred honor to uphold the spirit, hope, and promise of the Declaration of Independence.
Okay. John Doe, I am an owner of several companies because I own stock in the company. I am an owner. I actually own a piece of several corporations. But stockholders get a proxy to vote for issues the company has. Oftentimes, I am outvoted by the other owners of the country, of the company, and I don't get my way, even though I am an owner of the company. Similarly, that's what happens in states where people or legislatures and representatives pass laws in which they are constitutionally allowed to pass them. Somebody's not going to like them. The question first and foremost is the law constitutional? Next, is it a good law? And three, if it isn't, what can I do to get it repealed, altered, or replaced? And all you cannot say that simply because I don't like it or I think it's inconvenient or I think it infringes on my personal notions of liberty that therefore it is not valid and simply can be ignored with no consequence.
Well, see, here's where the problem comes in. Here's where the problem comes in on that. You see, they got a system in place that don't produce well-educated and civic responsibility individuals, citizens of the country or the state. They got their system in place, and that to keep that system in place is reinforced by the court.
Midwife.
Parents who know, parents are made to keep their kids in those systems. Now, here's where the onslaught on your liberty. If you don't like the way it's going, then you need to get a second and third job. Therefore, you got to delegate time to that second and third job that you could be delegating to the raising of your kids. It's a very clever scheme, a demonic scheme that's going on. That's why come people don't understand and don't know. It's deliberately dumb. They are deliberately dumbed down, deliberately and legally dumbed down, because if you try to challenge, you go to the judge, and the judge says there's nothing wrong with it.
Well, yeah, you can't. There's no way to challenge it through a judicial review because they got the papers you got to file. You got to jump through this hoop, go through that hoop, hire a lawyer, and it's time, get put on a docket. You don't get your say. So, yeah, I see what you're talking about there. The system is broke. You don't get to directly challenge anything as a citizen in this country. You have no rights because you have no say. How do you do it as a citizen, even those of us that are educated? Like me, I tried to bring issues up. I brought an issue up. I'm still fighting a year later. Come on. You know? I mean, it's just ridiculous, you know?
Well, it's one thing to need reform. That we all agree here there are reforms that need to be made. Like you say, people don't have an opportunity. I think the one Bianca raised is really critical, that there needs to be public commentary on proposed legislation. There needs to be a period in which public responses to that laws being proposed can be sent to the legislatures so they can consider them, and there ought to be the opportunity for the citizens to get up there, go to the chamber to their legislatures. I think every state legislature should adopt rules like that. And I think that to some extent that will address some of what John Doe is doing. But I do believe this. I believe in the final analysis, if a law is constitutional and the delegated representative of the people in the Constitution vote for it under their authority as state or federal legislatures, then that is law until it is shown to either be unconstitutional or enough people demand that it be repealed and gotten rid of. Otherwise, nothing can work.
That's backwards. The system assumes that all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Right,
so you don't have to prove that the law is, you know, wrong. All you have to prove is the fact that, hey, you don't have a right to burden and encumber me against my will.
So you're saying that a citizen or a relatively small group of citizens can exercise a prior veto on legislation?
Why not?
Okay, that's anarchy. That's literally anarchy.
No, how's that anarchy? You're allowing every person. No, wait, listen. I'm saying there should be more opportunities to get it altered. Every person having a right to mutual assent is not anarchy. And bullying is what you're talking about, where the majority gets to run roughshod over the minority.
So
that's not working toward the
law. It has to be 100% agreed to by every person that could be affected. Without 100% agreement, no legislation can be passed.
No, look, wait. I don't know why you think in a vacuum like that. Because, for example, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't smoke weed, I don't do drugs of any kind. So, therefore, if you want to do those kind of things, I shouldn't be able to pass a law that says, no, you can't do those kind of things because I think they're a detriment to society and a danger.
But you can pass a law to put limitations on it, like age limitation.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good for the
society. I should be responsible to prove that there is a harm or a justifiable encroachment in order to protect myself or society. You're innocent until proven guilty. If you want to drive drunk or smoke weed or whatever, you should not be burdened with me telling you you can't without me proving there's a justifiable means to you not being free to harm other people by doing it.
The age limitation comes about with a consensus of the people of the society. If you're going to live in that society, you got to respect that consensus. If they think it's going to harm children,
they
got a right to put it in place.
You're using the word consensus. Does that mean mutual assent or does survival of the fittest by the majority?
Yeah, I'm really having trouble with that term. Because mutual assent, I may be oversimplifying, I probably am, so forgive me, but it sounds to me like you're saying that, that's why I like it when you give me a specific example of something, so I kind of get a real handle on what you think this sort of encroachment is. But it sounds to me as though if a person imagines or actually suffers an infringement upon what they would like to do, that means all such legislation should be forestalled. That means they cannot be passed because someone has an idea that it is a violation of their personal encumbrances and obligations. I don't know how it would be possible to govern or legislate in an atmosphere like that.
Well, see, this is what the problem is, too, because at one time in this country, there was an agreed-upon consensus that certain materials are not supposed to be in the hands of minors. But now you see this effort to put that material that was once void, that was once illegal, now they're trying to put it in the hands of minors. That there is the kind of stuff that I don't like. And they are disregarding the consensus that was made when those laws, those rules were put in effect, as if today is a whole new day.
And also, don't forget, gang, sometimes the laws that are passed today don't apply to you because your life has not transitioned to another phase where that law impacts your life. And at that point down the road, whenever that law impacts your life and now you see how it's an abridgment or an infringement or a denial of your pursuit of happiness, now it's more of an issue. But back when they passed it, no, it wasn't a big deal. You know, it's just the same. One other idea that has come to mind in the past is, you know, why is it that people that pay property taxes through their real estate ownings to go to the school whenever the owners of the property don't even have kids?
Okay, yeah, but they benefit from a well-educated society. I mean, should you not be required to contribute toward that benefit that makes you overall, your business or your life better, being the fact that you got people around you that's well-educated and understanding?
But, Pionki, are you going to force that person to be involved in that situation, or are you going to respect their right to decide for themselves that particular decision by giving them mutual assent?
No, let me tell you what happens. Let me tell you what happened. They get sent a tax bill, and if they want to appeal it, they got a due process procedure how they can go about appealing it.
Right, but you're automatically saying that they're guilty, and now they have to defend their freedom, and you're depriving them of the same privileges that you already had. But you decided to use the government. Whoever decided to push that rule on them decided to use the government as a weapon and then make them defend themselves with these convoluted due process or, you know, you got to come up here just like Joe trying to get a job at the private security deal again. It's another one of those same kind of scams.
Well, no,
I'm not the greatest communicator, but do you understand what I'm trying to communicate?
Hang on, Sarge. No, because once I send you out the tax bill and you say you're not going to pay it, then there's a process that you are afforded in the procedure due process, which is in the 14th Amendment, that you can go about to argue your case.
No,
you made that process up.
Assigned that process and then made me responsible for it without my mutual assent to say that's a process that's acceptable.
Well, that process came about because of the consensus of the people and the need for it to be done, which that need you benefit from. In this case, you got a well-educated society. If you don't have a well-educated society, you're going to suffer from it.
So after the last 100 years we've had taxes, or say 75 years, do you really feel we got a better educated society through that process? I don't think so.
Well, that's another matter, John.
I'm an example of one right here now. I mean, would you ever thought I would be able to speak so intelligently on so many things, especially taxes, especially illicit material? So, yes, people benefit from that.
I would not justify $33 trillion in debt just because
you
and a handful of people got this brain.
You
to
are
be able
an example of that too. We heard you on C-SPAN. You spoke eloquently. You just didn't wake up with that. Matter of fact, you admitted yourself that a lot of it you learned from the people that you talk and that's around you. People that you talk with and that's around you apparently went through that educated system that got them to that position, and it was allowed to exist because of taxation that allowed its position.
You're still circumventing process and insulting the integrity of the law. This is the rule of man deceitfully masquerading under the color of law is what you guys are promoting. Pionki, I appreciate because you're actually arguing for my position.
But John Doe, actually you're arguing for Bianchi's position too, because what Bianchi is saying is he talked about how you get a well-educated populace when people in the states decide upon a system that will educate them properly, whether it's a private system, a public system, or a combination of the two. The people of the state decide that they want to have a structure in place that will ensure they get a well-educated populace. Now, I am not at this time, John Doe, trying to speak on the actual merits of the system that they adopt. I'm saying that they have a constitutional right through their representatives to decide what that system should be. They are not forbidden to do it. And if people in the state think that it is something that infringes upon them, and other people in the state, through their representatives, say, we want this system. We're not forbidden to legislate in it. Constitution is completely silent about it. We decide we want to legislate for it and create a taxing system to enable it. There is nothing in there that takes away your due process rights to not want it to be in place. You have the right to then go petition your government and say, this law is bullshit. It's wrecking my life. I got to pay for something I'm not getting any advantage of. I don't want to pay it. And you can keep doing that from now until doomsday, but you've got to be prepared for defeat if you cannot persuade your fellows to adopt your point of view.
See, that's a tyranny of your fellows or whoever you're referring to, that they get to decide the oligarchical dictator control.
Yeah, that's kind of true.
We got an oligarchy of dictators doing it now, and you and I, we're always complaining about it. So that system's already in place, apparently.
I'm going to keep on complaining about it, too, but that's kind of the way it is.
And
but people
have
debated.
That's a rule of man deceitfully masquerading under the color of law. That's not true integrity of law.
Well, you know,
it's
the hypocritical way in order to, the civilized way in order to alleviate that is, just take the seven debates that Stephen Douglas had with Abraham Lincoln. Seven debates. It took time to get each of us point across, whereas the citizens could hear what each had to say. You know, one of the most demonic schemes, and we see it going on, we talk about it, is the fact that our kids aren't being educated. They are not being educated, and that has gotten so bad that it is a security issue for the nation. It's a security issue. Anyone can come in and walk over a nation with an uneducated populace. One of the reasons they wasn't able to gain as much traction with Cuba as they possibly could, because 90-some-odd percent of the Cuban population was literate. They could pick up a paper and read and understand what's being said without being told what is being said.
And that's why the people in the know like to take advantage of the ignorance of the masses to run roughshod over people. That's why we got the perverted system of the rule of man deceitfully masquerading under the color of law.
Well, I think we're agreed on some things that there definitely needs. So there's definitely something wrong about the system that needs reform. But I simply do not think it is practicable, possible, or even correct to say that anybody can have a veto as an individual or even a small group of individuals over legislation unless that is clearly an unconstitutional violation of the right, say, a small religious sect that everybody in the state hates that is exercising their religion in accordance with their religion, not harming anyone, just having some things that other people consider odd, and they're saying we, the majority, are going to say you can't exercise your First Amendment right of religious exercise. Now, that I would agree with you on, but not on things like what we've been talking about here tonight, like beyond state education, like we're talking about with regard to driver's licenses, or, you know, how late a bar can stay open. Those are things that are within the purview of the people and their Ninth and Tenth Amendment rights. That would be tyranny of the minority to prevent the majority from legislating in those areas where they have a clear and uncontroverted constitutional right to legislate in.
Everybody has a constitutional right because everybody that's, you know, party to the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution are equal owners in governing because they own the self-governing of themselves, just like you do. And when we start using these percentages, you know, was the consensus 100% of the legal voting population, or was it a consensus of the oligarchy of dictators that get elected that are circumventing your right to self-determine your own pursuit of happiness?
Well, you know, like when drivers drive in a state, they have, in most states, they have to be able to show financial responsibility.
That financial responsibility don't have to be insurance. There's several ways you can do it. You can deposit a CD with the deposit through the Department of Motor Vehicle, or you can have a bond that covers the limitation, the monetary limitations within the financial responsibility law. But people got to the point where they say, look, I'm sick and tired of individuals running into my car, and all of a sudden I'm left with the repairs and for the damages. So they put in effect what's known as financial responsibility, or better known as car insurance. If you want to drive on these streets, you got to be able to show that you got insurance. Now, here's the thing. Insurance say we're not just going to insure any person that walk in here. We want to make sure that they, in fact, do know how to drive. They have to be able to show that they know how to drive. They need to show a license. A license is when you get one. Go to get one, they give you a mediocre test to prove that you can see, that you can read signs, and you know how to park and handle your vehicle when you go out in traffic. That's the way it is. It was brought about because people recognized a problem that they was having. It was costing them monetarily and sometimes their lives. They needed to have a fix for it. And they put a law in place that was supposed to do just that.
Now, John Doe, I would agree with you. I would agree with you if in the United States Constitution they had something in there saying that the right to operate a motor vehicle upon the public highway shall not be infringed, or a state has a law in there, amendment, or even a statute saying that the right to operate a motor vehicle on the public highway shall not be infringed. Then that would be a clear infringement of your right if they told you had to have a license, if you had to have training, if you had to have insurance, because you would have a right to operate a motor vehicle no matter what. However, you don't. That is a Ninth and Tenth Amendment issue. And I'm assuming you're against the requirement for driver's license. Am I correct? Or do you think there should be driver's license? Or do you think that is an infringement upon your ability to move freely?
It's up to the individual. They
okay,
get to
so you are against,
should,
so you are against
should,
driver's licenses being required on a public highway as a requirement, a legal requirement.
I'm only for it if 100% of us mutually agree to it. If it's less
okay.
than that, then the people that don't agree to it are being forced to, be servants to the others.
Okay.
That is not consistent
with an understanding of the United States Constitution.
So
that may
no
be consistent with an other understanding, but that is not consistent with an understanding of the United States Constitution.
You mean your understanding of the United States Constitution?
No. The objective determination has determined by what the framers of the Constitution said in the debates.
No, the whole idea is that every United States citizen that's party to the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution gets their will mutually, reciprocally enacted, codified, ratified.
That's not what they said at the Constitutional Convention.
No,
that isn't what they said.
It don't matter. We're working towards a more perfect union, not just trying to get a whole bunch of plantation owners to be able to protect themselves with their darn slaves that they're bringing over into America in the new colony system. The Constitution is supposed to reflect the spirit, hope, and promise of the Declaration of Independence. At the point in time that they were trying to ratify the United States Constitution, they were having problems with that, so therefore they gave certain things away. But they still gave us the Fifth, Article 5, in order to make amendments to work towards a more perfect union. So we're still in that process. This experiment is not finished. Either we're all equal in self-governing, and otherwise somebody's bullies and somebody's masters. And I'm saying we got to get past this. If you want to continue to say, oh, well, it can't be done because nobody will ever be totally satisfied, all I'm saying is we got to work by mutual assent. If people don't agree on this stuff, well, the people, depending on what the particular issue is, because if you want to, box me in or whatnot, then I have a right to exercise self-defense and reclaim my private property, the self-governing of me, because the destruction of my private property is a violation and a fraud against me.
Well, that's why they put things in place like financial responsibility laws. And you're never going to have 100% compliance, 100% agree, because you got people whose license have been suspended, and damn, they still driving.
I know that for sure. I mean, they had the license revoked for reckless driving, vehicular homicide, drunk driving multiple times, damage to property. I ran into them all the time. They were still driving anyway, and just as badly. There's not a state in the union that doesn't require some form of driver's license. Not one. I mean, it is something that's been universally adopted because the people in the states decided that's what they should have. There's nothing in the Constitution that prohibits them to legislate in that arena.
Yeah, but do you understand the point I'm trying to get across in the sense that the elitist have figured out how to get enough of the masses, whether they're ignorant or knowledgeable, to do their bidding as their foot soldiers in order to hoodwink and manipulate the rest of us. And they're getting away with it. And your position is continuing to give them that power, because you're not saying that we need mutual assent by all the people that are party to the you know, obligation or burden and encumbrance. It's just we got to get, if there's a majority of the people, tyranny of the majority, they get to bind and bound the rest of them as second and third class citizens, whether they like it or not.
Well, I can guarantee
you're
you.
Actually, providing the weapon for the elitists to continue to beat yourself down, and you don't even realize.
I can guarantee you, if my choice of candidates were to prevail, you'd have a lot less laws to worry about. But mine frequently doesn't. People
and
don't want to vote in my candidate.
Things don't become law until people start complaining. You know, you can fly a plane. You can fly a plane. You don't have to worry about no radar speed trap in the sky. How do they know you got a license? Oh, you don't have a license. I mean, a certificate. It's not a license. It's a certificate when it comes to aviation. Nobody can stop you. I was flying before I even had a certificate. Nobody stopped me. I didn't have to worry about going through a speed trap up there in the sky where the police is hiding in the bushes. There ain't no bushes in the sky. Ain't no speed traps in the sky.
Yeah, but you got to get an airport, though. You got to have an airport if you got a fixed-wing aircraft. You got to have it somewhere to put it down.
And, Pielke, you shouldn't have to worry about until when somebody that knows how to manipulate you catches you, and then they say you're violating something. Now you're fighting it in the courts in order to prove your innocence.
If you go through the right verbal jargon, you land at the airport, what they going to do? They'll let you fly around until you run out of fuel and crash into somebody's house, maybe even to their tower. They'll let you land.
Oh, no, they're going to let you in no matter what. I'm just saying that they're going to want to know who you are, though. If it's the issue of your identity and your ability to legally fly an aircraft in FAA-controlled airspace.
My second is here. I'm going to go to bed, and I have a nice show. She'll be in a second. She should be here.
Get well soon, Donnie. Get well soon, Don.
I will.
Yeah, Donnie, take care of yourself, man. We need you around for the long haul.
Oh, I will. I gotta play this cinnamon though. Hang on. This is John Doe Friday cinnamon.
In the House of Representatives. Of contempt for we the people. Our United States Constitution, Article 1, Sections 9 and 10, says there's no title of nobility at the federal or the state level. And then Article 4, Section 2 says the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens of the several states. And then any one of us calling into our congressman or senator trying to exercise our First Amendment right, or our First Amendment inalienable right of redress of grievance, you know, Congress shall make no law abridging the right of the people to petition their government for redress of grievance. So they are committing extrinsic fraud and they have contempt for we the people, destroying the legal effect of our private property. The self-governing of you is your private property. Self-governing of me is my private property. When they commit extrinsic fraud by denying us our will to be mutually and reciprocally included, enacted, codified, they've made us a second-class citizen, representing us like a pimp represents a prostitute.
Okay, that's Washington Journal yesterday morning on C-SPAN. And that was John Doe. and they hung up on him as quickly as they could when he, the prostitute, and you know what he said.
It's just struck too close to home.
Yeah, they didn't like that much.
It struck too close to home. He stopped talking about pimps and prostitutes.
Okay, guys.
That's that Democratic click.
Yes, sir.
All right, guys.
All right. Good night, Donnie. I hope you feel better, buddy.
I will. Bye. Good night.
Hey, gang. I really believe I'm supposed to love my neighbor as myself. Whether I agree with your lifestyle or not, it's misprision if I do not stand up and defend you. And I don't want to face my maker, my creator, and he say, well, hey, when were you a brother's keeper and treated your neighbor as yourself? And, you know, I'm just trying to follow through with the rule of law, the one and only true rule of law, and that's to let you live your life and do you no harm as long as you're not doing harm to others or encroaching on their rights, privileges, immunities, protections, and benefits. And I just find that we're being hypocritical through this process a lot. And I'm not saying I have the answer. I'm saying I'm stimulating the conversation to find a more perfect union because this experiment is not over. And we see cracks in the foundation, and we better figure out how to fix them or we're really up a creek without a paddle. But thank you for participating.
But, John Doe, I'm not saying that I even think that your view of things is something I might not like to see adopted. Because I got news for you, buddy. I'm often on the losing side of political argument. My view of the way things ought to be frequently does not prevail. So, but at the same time, I would be a hypocrite if I did not concede the right of the people to legislate in things that I myself am not in favor of. The Constitution simply allows the people, under the rubric of the 9th and 10th Amendments, what you speak of in the 9th Amendment and what I'm speaking of in the 10th Amendment, and there is a balance between those two seemingly opposing factors. And basically, our Constitution has – the only thing Barack Obama got right about the Constitution was when he said it was a charter of negative liberties. It says what the government is not allowed to do to you. And that's basically what it is. So if it's not illegal, then they're free to do whatever you want in it. Before they came up with the Harrison Act in 1914, you could do all the cocaine you wanted. Nobody could punish you because it wasn't illegal to use cocaine. Now the people got a bug up their behind and decided they ought to make it illegal. And they did. And there was nothing in the Constitution to make it illegal, except, of course, for the fact that it shouldn't have been done at the federal level, should have been done at the state level if that's what they wanted to do. But that's neither here nor there. The fact of the matter is the Constitution gives the people a right to legislate in such matters, whether I agree with them or not. And as I said before, frequently I do not. I am on the losing side. I don't like it. But I would be a hypocrite if I did not recognize the right of the people to legislate in such matters in their state.
I just want to caveat that the Constitution does not give us any rights. It already states our inalienable rights that we are granted from our Creator that are we put in the Constitution to remind each other and to help educate the masses and remind ourselves of what we already agreed to. But the perverted manipulation of interpretation is what we're struggling with because certain people feel because certain things wouldn't get done, so their selfish ambition wouldn't be realized as quick. They're willing to run roughshod over their fellow man and dictate it by them, you know, whatever group that's in position to make those gateway decisions. Well, number one, as an owner of your own property, the self-governing of you, you don't give that up. So the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, you never lose exclusive jurisdictional power and authority over determining your burdens, encumbrances, and obligations. You're giving them a fiduciary responsibility to manage and administrate your property properly without
doing you harm or doing anybody else harm or without, you know, encroaching on others or allowing others to encroach on you. We don't talk about stuff like this very much. That's law. That's legal. All this other stuff is just a scam of the mind in order to allow the oligarchy of dictators to continue to manipulate the system for them to maintain control. Back to you. Thanks for the time.
Well, self-governance is obviously, even though self-governance would seem to imply the self and governance, nonetheless, under the constitutional scheme, which we cannot deny because it is the supreme law of the land, whether we think it should be or not, it gives a collective dimension to self-governance because the people elect the legislatures who go to the capitals and write the legislation and pass it into law. So even though we have the right of self-governance through the representatives that we elect collectively, that right of self-governance clearly is managed collectively. It has to be. If we're going to go by the constitutional scheme, we elect legislatures who write the law. None of us on our own can just walk into a state capitol, present a bill, and demand of the legislature vote on it and demand that they pass it. None of us have that authority or that power because that would be the tyranny of the minority.
But you're saying collectively. But what's not being said is what collectively represents. Does it represent 100% mutual assent or collectively represent some other level of democracy where two wills
simply
impossible
to think.
It represents the agreed upon rules that the society put in place. See,
no, but you say collectively. But you're not representing 100% of the collective population.
There is no way could ever be passed. Never.
There is no absolute when
that's
it comes down to
that. That's assumed. We don't know that to be true or not.
I'm as certain as the sun will rise the next morning. I am absolutely certain there is not a single bit of legislation you could put before any legislative body that will get 100% assent. I can guarantee you, never.
If you were to put slavery back on the issue, you wouldn't get 100% participation in the vote count. Those that are able to vote wouldn't show up.
Even back when they had slavery, they didn't get 100% of the people voting for slavery.
So what you're saying is it justifies the criminal activity that continues to happen because you're not going to ever get 100% of these people to work?
So you're saying that requiring people to have driver's license to operate a motor vehicle on a public highway is criminal activity?
I said that they have, all of the people need to have their will mutually reciprocally represented in the vote decision on whatever that rule is.
Well, the problem I'm having with your use of the word
owners exercise ownership rights. You're depriving them of their ownership rights. That's destruction of private property.
Yeah, I understand that, but I'm just saying I can never agree with your idea of 100% assent to legislation. That is impossible. That will never happen.
Well, it's assumed that I get and everybody gets to be free unless you prove we're guilty of doing something wrong. You're turning it opposite. You're saying, we get to go ahead and pass stuff because we can't guarantee everybody's going to want to vote or, you know, will vote yes on this issue.
John Doe, I don't know if you know it or not, since we're talking about slaves. Later on, as interviewers went around and interviewed slaves on different plantations, do you know there were some slaves that said, I don't want to have anything to do with this here freedom?
A few, yeah, there were.
Yeah, I mean, it's recorded. You had teens from colleges go around in the South, and they interviewed slaves, and many of them said they didn't want to have anything to do with this here slavery in 1808. In Ghana, West Africa, when the British tried to stop indigenous slavery, you had people there amongst them that said, we don't want to do away with slavery.
Yeah, but Pionki, you're intelligent enough to understand that on every issue, the people that are talking sometimes have
subconscious information and knowledge about what they're talking about that's never communicated to the rest of us, and we, the rest of us, think that we're smart enough to justify a judgment on what the criteria would have been until somebody else decides, or that particular person decides to reveal it to us, and then we go, oh, we didn't realize there was another perspective or angle to this that we could have considered.
Well, you shouldn't have to reveal them. I thought they had free will. Don't they have free will? Why should you have to reveal it? They're supposed to have
free
will.
They don't read your mind in my mind. But they don't read your mind in my mind in order to, for them to understand that we don't understand that which is in their subconscious that they don't know that they even need to communicate it to us for us to wake up and understand what they're trying to say.
Well, it's not reading the mind. It's a reading of a law that's written and posted. Now, if they don't understand how to do that, I don't know what to say. That just reinforced the fact that you're never going to get 100% participation agreement on anything. It just ain't going to happen.
When you say you ain't going to get 100%, are you meaning that you're going to justifiably leave people out, or are you allowing them to just not want to participate? There's a voluntary decision being made if they just volunteer not to participate. But if you're forcing them to participate, that's a total different situation.
Well, just like these past elections, when you only had about 30% turnout in many areas, well, the 70% apparently didn't want to be involved in. So are we to make them?
Well, I don't think so. But at the same time, I think just like you guys are trying to say in one hand, the whole evolution or evolvement or transformation of society actually comes about by our world experience in our own small culture, subculture, so to speak. And so therefore, whenever you have groups of people that talk, just like you noticed I was saying, I learned from a whole lot of other communications and stuff along the path. Well, maybe certain people don't get it the same way that you and I get it, but I still don't have the right to force them. Otherwise, others have the right to force me. And if I'm going to fight because I don't like people stealing my private property and then trying to force me into what they want, then we're just going to ask for a whole bunch of, you know, backside kicking going on. Because if we ain't going to show enough decency and dignity to respect and show due consideration to our fellow man to stand up for their right to self-decide all their burdens, encumbrances, and obligations, then we're not worthy of them, of that decision-making process ourselves. We're just hypocrites. If we want to use a governmental system to get things done and run roughshod over our fellow man just because we can, then we're aiding and abetting the enemy to self-destruction. And that's part of the problem. We're not working towards a more perfect union. We got a whole lot of people that want things done, and they're willing to do shortcuts and run roughshod over the fellow man in order to get it done. And that just stirs up more problems. And then the people in Congress don't understand that, and that's why they are telling all the January 6th people that went up to Capitol Hill that they're terrorists or insurrectionists, when the actual interloping insurrectionists are all the congressmen and senators who were destroying your private property and not honoring your right of redress in order to have your will and mutually reciprocally included so we could all work towards a more perfect union. Back to you. Thanks for the time.
Well, I'm telling you, we wouldn't have any need for the police power if everyone agrees that what the laws are. This is 100% consensus on everything. There would be no need for police power because someone at some level is going to disagree with every single law someone passes, to include the laws that the minority that you envision would have the right to veto. There will be people who will not want to comply with the law that they have passed. It is impossible to get 100% consensus on, unless, of course, you are actually living in a tyranny where it is imposed upon you. There has to be a consensus, and it has to be arrived at democratically through the processes that the state have in place in order to legislate in those affairs that the Constitution does not forbid them to legislate in. I think that is the only way it can work.
So you're implying undue influence, coercion, bullying, duress.
Yes, because to some extent, that's what all law is. All law, at the end of the day, implies the threat of force to enforce it. That would be any law. Otherwise, it has no meaning.
That's why
it has no meaning.
Then you're innocent until proven guilty, and you're not a... You're not an equal citizen under the Declaration of Independence.
Think about it, John Doe. Think about it, John Doe. John Doe, we all agree here. I have heard you agree here on many occasions that people of the civil rights movement, they had a people, black people had a right to equality under the law and the same opportunities and liberties that the citizens of the several states had. Well, I got news for you. There were people at the time who did not agree with that. They didn't agree with it. In fact, the national consensus was that should be the case, but in certain areas of the South, it was not. They were a minority. So what did the president do? What did President Johnson do? He sent military police in jeeps wearing steel helmets, carrying M14 rifles on their shoulders, and mounted M60 machine guns in the jeeps to enforce the law after the Selma Bridge March. You go back and look at the documentary. You will see armed federal troops with machine guns and fully automatic M14 rifles on the shelves enforcing the law. It's like I said, every single law has at the bottom line the threat of force to enforce it. Otherwise, it cannot be counted on to be implemented.
And those are the rights and privileges that every citizen expects to be protected by. And in order to achieve a more perfect union, it requires just as much, if not more, individual effort than it does a group effort. Because it's going to have to be the individual that's going to have to come together, well qualified, in order to form the group. And that's not going to ever be 100%.
But in consideration breeds inconsideration. Disrespect breeds disrespect. Violent governing, using the government as a weapon to get your way, or any group that's used the government as a weapon to get their way, breeds more self-defense.
Well, yeah, those girls down there where Johnson had to send the troops were United States citizens, and they deserve to be protected as United States citizens and have the law to protect their constitutional rights and the Bill of Rights that's afforded to them in order to put the states in position where they're supposed to
be. I think we should agree upon one thing, and I think actually intrinsically we all agree on this. There are simply some things that are worth fighting for. And, yes, that includes fighting to uphold the rule of law, particularly rule of law that is moral, ethical, and constitutional. If that means we have to have a fight to enforce it, then let it be. There are some things worth fighting for, and we need to reinforce that notion every opportunity we get.
And it starts as a contendum. First, there's the redress. There's the petition, writing letters, making phone calls, so. Then you got peaceful demonstrations. Then you got violent demonstrations. Then, as Ramaswamy said, you start tearing up stuff. I mean, that's what they've done down in Birmingham. They've done that in Birmingham. You had one guy, I can't think of his name. What was the guy's name, the black man named him, the multimillionaire? Gaston. Gaston told white businesses that it's to your benefit to take these signs down at the water fountain for color and for white. And they listened to him and done it.
Yeah.
And you actually had some blacks that was against Gaston, called him Uncle Tom. So that right there is a real live historical demonstration of that you never will have 100% participation or agreement. You had many black preachers in St. Louis did not want Martin Luther King to come to that city because they said he brought trouble.
That's exactly right, Pianki, and that's what we're talking about. That's what I was talking about with John Doe earlier. That's where your First Amendment rights of persuasion come into effect. That's what Gaston did with the businessmen. It didn't take force from the federal government and MPs armed with M14 rifles and M60 machine guns. All he had to do was exercise his right of free speech and persuade others to his point of view. It's a combination. It's a combination of persuasion and the implied threat of force at the end of the day. Because I don't care if it's a dog leash law. At the end of the day, all law enforcement relies upon the actual or implied use of force. There's no getting around it. That will be for any law that you propose or any law that I propose. That is literally the truth, whether we like it or not. It's uncomfortable to realize, but we have to realize it. That's why I say whenever you are talking about passing any law, the first question you need to ask yourself, other than constitutionality, is, am I willing to see someone killed in the process of enforcing this law? And if you sincerely believe that, then maybe that law needs to be passed.
And you know, the thing that kicked off A.G. Gaston was when they start using young kids as the object of biting dogs in high-pressure water holes that was implied by Bull Connor, by the way, who was a announcer for the Birmingham Black Baron that Willie Mays played on. So that there is a show that everybody don't agree. Gaston was totally against that. And being that he was a very prosperous business person there in that area, he told the white businesses, hey, look, you got to change these things. This ain't good. And they listened, and they did. And thus we are where we are today, much better.
So we just ignore the Constitution, no title of nobility, and everybody having the same privileges and immunities, because certain people are more noble than others, and they get to decide things, and they get the special privileges that others don't. Because we don't get to mutually decide our burdens, encumbrances, and obligations, just these gateway keepers to power. So therefore, the Constitution is a fraud.
Well, when you don't exercise your civic duties given to you by the Constitution, somebody's going to take advantage of it. And when my governor calls himself king, a duke, a lord, then I will look at that phrase with a little bit more concern than what most people do today. I've yet to see a governor call himself king.
When the citizens call their congressmen for redress of grievance and they just poo-poo it and just ignore them and continue to run roughshod over them, ramming the rules, laws, process, procedures down their throat, then they've just violated the Constitution themselves. We're just
now,
asking
now,
what
when,
it is.
Now, John Doe, when you use the term titles of nobility, are you speaking of honorifics like the honorable congressman or the senator, which is actually a constitutional title, I might add? Representative is a constitutional title. Is that what you mean by titles of nobility, or are you speaking of something figurative or implied? Because I'm not quite clear what you mean by that.
Okay, good question. I'm thinking of it from I explained this earlier, and I'm going to say the same thing because that's the only best way I know how to explain it, and that is no title of nobility in the concept of what's going on in the first Article 1, Sections 9 and 10. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States. No state shall grant any title of nobility, meaning that when it comes to governing, because this Constitution is all about how we, the people, interact with each other, how we transact with each other, how we relate to each other, how we treat each other. Nobody is in a position of nobility because all of us own – wait, let me finish. Thank you. Because we all own our own property called self-governing of me. And therefore, when the two intersect, when your self-governing of you intersect with me because we're interacting or transacting with each other, now we have to figure out by mutual assent the convention of rules, laws, process, and procedures that we both agree to operate under. Otherwise, one group, one person is taking advantage of the other. That's why I can't dictate to you, you have to buy my car. You can't dictate to me that I have to sell you my car. We either work by mutual assent in the governing rules, processes, and procedures. Otherwise, one of us is more noble than the other. And that's why I always include Article 4, Section 2, the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities as citizens of the several states, because the privileges and immunities fall into that same category of understanding the tools that we all agree on in the conventions of agreement of operation of how we're going to interact, transact, and relate to each other in governing when we all own governing. because you own the governing of you, and I own the governing of me, and then everybody else individually owns their governing. That's why we own governing in unity. We're joint owners in unity of governing. Look up that word in the legal dictionary, unity, unity of title, unity of interest, unity of possession, unity of property. I mean, I may not be the greatest communicator in the world, but if you're circumventing the very fundamental law by using force of any kind, you've thrown all the law completely out the window. And we've been under that mind, brain shrink, home syndrome, like I've said before, since about 1804 or 1808. Seems like right after the Bill of Rights and all came to be, the countries basically lasted for, you know, another 5 or maybe 7, 10 years, and then there was not enough education to make sure that the people understood all the details, so therefore we've had ebbs and flows, and we're trying to still work for the, you know, perfect union, but we have ebbs and flows because different people are at different levels of understanding in this respect. Does that make sense to the title of nobility that you're asking me about? Sorry.
No, I think you're using, well, I'm going to say this. I think you're using the title of nobility out of context. They were talking about them kings that they ran away from back over there.
I agree.
That's what they were talking about. It wasn't talking. I have yet to hear even an inkling about calling the state governor a king, a lord.
I think you're talking about something that's figurative and not literal. And what Pianki said, I think, is correct, because he's talking about a literal title of nobility, such as existed, commonly understood to be existed in Europe, particularly in Europe, with our experience with the crown and with the arbitrary diktats of King George. They were talking about actual titles of nobility that are hereditary. So, no, I don't think they meant what you meant at all, John Doe.
Wait, Sarge. That's a brain shrink that they want us to believe, because the fact of the matter is all of the Declaration of Independence is about is these people getting out from under dictatorial, burdensome tyrants that were trying to run their lives and teach.
And who
they
was imposing that, John Doe?
What?
Who was imposing that upon them?
It was King George. And here's
but you're trying
thing.
To say it's
about...
okay to do it today. You're saying that's
no,
okay.
No, I'm not saying nobody.
How could you say title of nobility has nothing to do with the relationship of how we treat each other and how we act with each other? It's all about
you don't have to have a title of nobility to behave in a tyrannical fashion. You don't need to have a title of nobility. You just, what did Joseph Stalin call himself? He calls himself Comrade Secretary. He was secretary of the Communist Party. I mean, that doesn't sound like a title of nobility, but nonetheless, he instituted tyranny on the Soviet people. You don't have to have a title of nobility to be a tyrant.
You're disrespecting the whole Declaration of Independence by saying this title is only about a title of nobility is only about the role.
Yeah, but you just implied that a title of nobility implies the ability to impose tyranny. No, it doesn't.
And what is the Declaration of Independence?
This was when these people declared
we want to be we divorce you. That's what the Declaration of Independence was. Divorce you.
Because of the right of kings. Remember that? The right of kings. So therefore, title of nobility is entered into our United States Constitution to say that we will not have relations with people that want to have those kind of interactions and dictatorial control over us anymore. We're independent, self-governing, free people per the spirit, hope, and promise of the Declaration of Independence, and that's what the Constitution is supposed to uphold.
But they wrote that in there because of their most recent experience with that type of situation. You know, somebody who's the head of a human resources, they got a title, the head of human resources. So what you're talking about is based upon that period in history with the experience that those who wrote that, they had that remembrance in their head, and they didn't want to have anything else to do with it. They decided to write that in the Declaration of Independence.
Okay. And the Constitution.
No, that's not in the Declaration of Independence. That's in the Constitution.
Like George so remind us. And you know another thing, you talking about I can't even remember the word. That's more of a individual responsibility than it is a group. In order
the
to
Constitution
work for,
is telling you this is not what the people that get into government are authorized to do. That's why it goes on to tell you in Article 4 and so many other places that you have the right to due process. You own your own private property, blah, blah, blah. And that's why you know as well as I do that the title of nobility issue as well as the rights and privileges is about interactions between human beings, the governing of us, how we transact with each other, how we relate to each other. It's not about this name label that's over these people because they were king. It's what they how they were acting and behaving to the other people.
Well, the thing is about that behavior. the people that you elect, if they act like that, then you need to get away from them, get rid of them. You know how? Have you ever heard the term the shot across the bow? Until you shoot a shot across the bow and remove one of these damn judges. Until you shoot a shot across the bow and recall your U.S. congressperson or your U.S. senator, they're going to figure that you don't care, and they're going to continue to do it. The responsibility to achieve what you're talking about is more individual than it is a group because you're never going to get 100% out of a group. It's that first individual that works for it.
Right, but that's why we are supposedly educating each other in these conversations to help make sure that people have a copy of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, and they're able to talk about it and figure out what the truth of how we actually defend each other and each other's right to their own, you know, pursuit of happiness, privileges, and immunities and protections under the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Otherwise, we're all just abusing each other by using the government as a weapon to force our agenda down their throat.
Well, when those National Guards accompany those black kids to school, that is how it's done. They are protecting their constitutional rights. That's how they
enabled
to protect them from those who didn't want them to have it.
It was force that enabled John Doe. Force. The threat of it. It always will be. It may be regrettable, but you cannot avoid it if you have a law that is meant to be, and here's the key word, enforced. It
so
implies in the very name, forced.
But I think,
so, Sarge, does that justify the people who are doing it to us now doing it?
Well, if it's a moral, ethical, and constitutional law, I have no problem whatsoever with the application of force.
Cinnamon's trying to
immoral and unethical to use your force to ram these rules.
I believe in objective definition. And that when I say that, when I use those words, I mean objectively, transcendently, moral, and ethical.
Okay.
Cinnamon, you trying to say something?
I am. Thank you, Payanki.
I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. So what I'm getting from this is John Doe is trying to tell us that our governors, our representatives, our congressmen are acting like they are above us and they don't have to listen to us. And it's up to us to rein them back in and have them do what we want them to do, the reason that they were put into office in the first place.
Well, a primary contention of what he's been saying all night, and that's why I now am clear on what he's saying. He is saying that every single law that is passed must be 100% assented to. I asked him to clarify it several times. He means it, 100%, not even a three-fourths consensus, like when you have to ratify an amendment. He means 100%. Anyone who takes exception to any law passed by any legislature should be considered to be null and void, because that individual should have the right to make the determination as to how that law should apply to them.
There's
here's the thing. The citizens have the right to up the ante at any time that they want to. They can make it 90% if they want to. Go through the proper procedure.
Yeah, they could. You got to convince them to do it there, John Doe. Convince the people that no law can be passed
without 100% assent. Now, that is within your constitutional ability to do. And if a state decides they wish to adopt 100% of the voters assenting to any law, then that will be the law of that state.
No, Sarge, the First Amendment, the Congress has no right to, or shall not, I don't remember exactly how it's worded, Congress shall make no law, you know, abridging the right of the people to petition their government for redress of grievance. Redress of grievance. So therefore, if I understand what you guys are saying, you're saying that if somebody petitions their congressman and senator for a remedy, you know, redress of a grievance, that only the special privileged and favored people get it, not everybody.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Not everybody's an equal citizen in the United States. Some are second and third class citizens.
Yeah, no, but that's
so
not what I'm saying.
Not everybody gets that. That, wait, I'm asking to make sure, because that's what the Declaration, I mean, the United States Constitution says, we're all supposed to be under the spirit, hope, and promise of the Declaration of Independence as independent, self-governing, free people, and we have a right of redress of grievance in our Constitution. Now, either all of us, 100% of us, have redress of grievance, or it's a favored class, and there's disenfranchisement to a minority class.
But no, you don't have the right of redress of grievances. You have the right to petition for a redress of grievances. You do not have the right to expect that you as an individual or even as a group are going to be satisfied in that petition. It does not say you have the right to redress. It says you have the right to petition for a redress. And that is a critical distinction.
Okay, so we're not all equal. Some of us are more highly favored than others is what you're saying.
Well, that's not true.
In effect, redress means
to make amends and to correct. That's what it means.
Remedy.
That's all it means.
And what does petition mean? What does petition mean?
All right, but why is it in there? If we're all supposed to be independent, self-governing people per the spirit, hope, and promise of the Declaration of Independence, and you're saying, well, hey, because you get a right to petition, well, that means there's going to be certain people that do not get – wait, let me finish. There's going to be certain people that do not get remedy. I understand that in the context that if those particular people that want remedy are not getting remedy because what they want to do is harming other people, encroaching on their rights, privileges, and immunities. That's why I said before, we don't all get what we want, but we should work by mutual assent. Because by mutual assent, I'm not allowing you to burden and encumber me and obligate me against my will and run roughshod over me, and you're not going to allow me to run roughshod over you and burden and encumber you against your will.
Well,
we're
that
all
should be
in this together, a more perfect union.
That should be, and you know that other word, the work toward a more perfect union is more individual than it is a group. Now, what you just got through saying, that has to be a consensus among the group of people that's going to present that into the form of a petition. That ain't fair. There's nowhere in the world everybody in the state's going to know what this group here in one city is talking about and thinking of. That's for you to create that movement. You have to create that movement amongst a group of y'all or you or people like-minded that has to come up and say, this is what we want to do. And even in that, it's not going to be 100%.
So, Pionk, you're implying that it's the bulk of people who have the resources to get enough collective minds to make a difference. If the people that are at the lower income spectrum or homeless or whatnot don't have the means to go out and have that collective assembly work together, even though the First Amendment to the Constitution doesn't say that you have to get a group to petition, it just says petition the government for redress of grievance. It doesn't say you have to have two or three or four or
and
more.
It also doesn't say you can expect satisfaction for it either.
It don't
but
have
you,
to.
If you don't expect satisfaction, then you're saying there is titles of nobilities and favored classes.
No, what I'm saying is that
we're not all under the same. We are not under the same privileges and immunities.
Let me address this thing.
Absent a constitutional basis to overturn a law, you cannot have an individual exercising an individualized veto over every bit of legislation that the people in the 10th Amendment authority legislate through their representatives. You just can't govern that way.
And the resources.
I already told you I agree with that, Sarge, because the people who want to run roughshod over you and burden and encumber you and you know, encroach on your rights of, you know, privileges and immunities, they aren't going to get what they want out of the system. They're going to be disgruntled, because that's why when you stop a thief from crawling in your window, he's pretty upset and bummed out that you caught him in the act of his crime. So then naturally not everybody's going to be wanting that, but you got to allow every person to have mutual assent, because if you start telling that not everybody gets mutual assent, you're actually allowing the crooks to have the power to control you and the rest of us that are trying to do the right thing.
But it has
again,
to
I think we're having
someplace.
A circular argument here. We're having a circular argument here. We agree about the right to dissent and petition. What we don't agree about is the right to obtain satisfaction for your petition of redress. I mean, and look, it doesn't matter what the law is. Everyone has the right to go to their government and say, I don't like this. I'm going to marshal other people who agree with me, and we're all going to come back here and be W with protest until you change your mind. Now, see, you've got an absolute right to do that. What you don't have the right for is to expect you're going to get your goal accomplished.
And you and it has nothing to do with the resources. Libraries are free. You and your group can meet in the library. They provide you with computer and paper where you can keep records. You can write your letters. They even provide you with recording devices so you can record the conversation. That there is free. It's to your disposal.
No.
You and your group, then you have to be the one to kick off the movement. You're not going to get the whole state to show up at the library for your meeting. It ain't going to happen.
See, this is all backwards. You're not respecting your own individual sovereignty to decide your own burdens and encumbrances and obligations, and you're making it a collective socialist issue. So therefore, you're violating.
You yourself were saying it should be collective. Now you
know
what you said. Yes, you did.
I
you just said.
When
you
did
said
I 100%.
I'm. We.
No,
we
I
show
didn't.
You ain't gonna be 100%. It's not
no,
gonna be
100%. You mean.
You're
I
not
get
gonna
you.
Get 100% of the state in a library room.
No. You're misunderstanding me. I'm saying we all have the right to mutual assent, and if it doesn't work out on our behalf, then we shouldn't get it. That's why I accept the fact that not everybody is going to get what they want, because if we can't reach mutual assent, then it's not active.
So for it to carry, what percentage of mutual assent does it need to be?
Cinnamon.
What percent of mutual consent?
Well, Cinnamon
need
wants
to
get in after your comments. Yeah, let her get in after this.
Do you want me to respond to that, or Cinnamon, go ahead?
No,
well,
you
real
go ahead.
Quick, respond. Respond to that real quick. What percent? And see, just the fact that you're going to pick a percent is going against your whole logic, saying it's going to be 100%.
It ain't. No, it ain't, because you're misunderstanding my point. My point is every person has a right to mutual assent in the decisions. That don't mean 100% of everybody's going to agree. It just means that whatever percentage less than 100% of the people who want to participate is not going to pass. It's not going to be allowed to stand. There's a difference.
Well, it ain't gonna, John, I'm lost on this, man. Go ahead, Cinnamon.
Oh, he just lost me on that one, too. I was thinking he was upset about if you really do want to petition your government or you want to petition a law, you don't necessarily have to have a group of people. You're just going to get more notice if you have a group of people.
And that is true, too.
No doubt about that.
If you're going to respect the truth of the spirit, hope, and promise of the Declaration of Independence, and that's what the Constitution is supposed to be upholding, every individual is only accountable to their Creator. We assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station of which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. That's why all men are created equal. In what way? Self-governing. You're not created equal with the same amount of peanuts or the same amount of job opportunities or the same number of houses or the same square foot of land to work off of. The only thing you got guaranteed to you is self-governing of you, because God, your creator, gave you your own self-governing property. and you are the exclusive owner. You have exclusive power and authority and jurisdiction over all your burdens, encumbrances, and obligations of governing. And that's what the Declaration of Independence was all about. No other human being gets to dictate anything about your governing. And so when the Constitution gets perverted in its interpretation to deny even one person redress when they petition for a redress of grievance, then you created multiple caste system with different classes that certain people with favoritism gets what they want out of the deal. The rest get the whole government used as a weapon, beating them down. And that's what we've had for 200 plus years, and that's what the elite is using now, and they're using it against us, and we can't even get out of our own way.
All right, let me develop the theme a little bit further, okay? Okay, let's – all right. You got a law. They just passed through the legislature. Overwhelming consent of the electorate body. You had commentary period allowed, say 2 months of commentary period, public commentary. The bill was exposed, every aspect of it, exposed to the public for review and scrutiny. There was public commentary period in the legislature and elsewhere. And at the end of the day, it passed with, say, 68% of the elected voting in the assent. Okay, now, let's pause now in effect, and let's say 20% of the people in the state think it is an encumbrance and a burden upon their liberties and obligations. Okay, 20%. Now, I would ask you, should those people, now I understand they can do this, should they be able to simply disregard the law and not comply with it and expect no consequences, or should they expect to disobey the law and be fully prepared to accept the consequences of noncompliance with the law?
As long as they are not cheating on others' rights, privileges, immunities, benefits, and protections, and doing no harm to others, yeah, they should not be held accountable to it, burdened by it.
So you're saying that they should be able to disregard the law with no consequences and ramifications? Would that be put into the law that was just passed? What if that particular condition was not placed into the law? Then what?
I'm not sure I follow you under that, what that particular
condition is. Okay, you just said that
is.
If the person to whom, let's say, a law against vaping, okay? Law against vaping, or law against drinking alcohol in public from a paper bag at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, all right? And they do that in public, and it's and they get arrested for it. Now, are you saying they should suffer no consequences for disobeying laws if they didn't do any harm to anyone else, even though it was a clearly and constitutionally passed law under the Constitution of the state and the United States Constitution? You saying they should have no consequences for disobedience of the law, or should they say, well, I'm going to disobey the law and I'm prepared to accept whatever consequences ensue for not complying with the law?
Sarge, I'm saying that you're implying that that was a constitutional law. That's not. That's the rule of man deceitfully masquerading under the color of law, because the person that you've subjected to the law was not ever allowed the right of mutual assent on that law. Because the person that wants to drink out in the open, whatever, like that, if that law would have came before them and given them a right to mutual assent to it or not, they'd have probably said no. So it would have never existed for them to be in violation of it.
So I assume then that you think we're having a discussion about whether laws, such laws, are constitutional. I understand that argument. But my specific question was, should they face no consequences for noncompliance with the law? After all, people are through the civil rights era, people are arrested all over the place for violating unconstitutional civil rights law, but no one said that the authorities did not have the right to arrest them, even though the law was later deemed to be unconstitutional.
Now, I'm not sure what part of that I need to address.
Well, my question is, see, the people in the civil rights era knew what they were doing was illegal at the time, disobeying unconstitutional civil rights, disobeying unconstitutional Jim Crow laws was illegal at that time, and they expected to be arrested for it, and they expected they would suffer consequences for not complying with the law. I don't recall anybody in the civil rights movement saying they did not expect to face fines and penalties for not complying with the law, even though they said these laws are clearly unconstitutional, as they were. So again, my question to you is, should such persons who do not approve this law that was passed overwhelmingly in the state legislature and would appear to be, even if it's bad law, constitutional, so you're saying that these people should not have to face any consequences for not complying with the law?
Correct.
Okay.
Well,
I'm glad you made that clear. That's all I wanted to know. You clarified that for me. Thank you very much.
So if it said that that blacks are not supposed to sit at the lunch counter, and they sat at the lunch counter and they got arrested, you mean to tell me that they shouldn't have been arrested for breaking the law?
Correct. It wasn't a law. See, that's the rule of man deceitfully masquerading under the color of law.
It was a law. It was a law. It was bad law.
Now,
go to show you it was a law, John Doe, because you had black people was against blacks doing that. You had blacks that was against blacks.
Wait a minute.
Let me say something, please. You had blacks who was against blacks breaking that law. So it had something.
Hey, you guys call it constitutional because it stands. Therefore, you think it's legal. It's not.
We call it constitutional.
It might be de facto.
That's not.
No, we said that law was unconstitutional, John Doe. We said the law was explicitly unconstitutional, but we said it was the law.
But it's not the law. That's what the mindset of
the... Until it is deemed to be unconstitutional by the authority.
An unconstitutional law is an invalid law.
That's right.
An unconstitutional law is an invalid law.
And the people who had been arrested under that law had their records expunged. My point is they were able to make the arrest, and the arrests were able to stand. There wasn't any retroactive punishment for the police or the government officials who enforced the unconstitutional law, because at the time it was passed, it was the law because it was passed in accordance with state authority. They didn't punish any of those authorities for illegal detention for enforcing the law
that
was passed.
Maybe that's the problem.
You've got to change the constitution then.
Because that's what we're saying. Take an oath to uphold the Constitution. They're enforcing what they know is an unconstitutional law. And there are no consequences for them but for arresting and beating people up to enforce a law that was unconstitutional and unjust.
Let's change the Constitution to reflect that then. I agree with you that we should change the Constitution to reflect that.
It had to be deemed unconstitutional because the Constitution allowed the states to exist. The states allowed the cities, towns, and villages to exist and govern themselves.
But you're talking generically. The people that reside in the state, not an oligarchy of dictators that run roughshod over
That's
the residents
not true,
of the state.
Because
you got laws in certain
municipalities. Wait a minute. Now, this is something I know something about.
You're condoning bullying and coercion and undue influence.
You got John Doe, you're wrong here. And I'm going to tell you how. You let me see. Don't talk over me. You don't want nobody to talk over you. Because you got municipalities have a law against certain things. You go over to the next municipality, it's okay. That's because the state constitution allowed those municipalities to exist and rule themselves. It has nothing to do with Congress.
Why the mafia people
certain counties that are dry, and the county next to it is full service.
You guys know how I feel about the Second Amendment. I think it is absolute and is not to be infringed. It is infringed every day throughout the United States. Every single goddamn day, somebody in some jurisdiction is infringing on the Second Amendment. Now, you know how I feel about it. But I'm saying that has to work its way through the courts, or, as Laurie implied, We need to fix the Constitution so patently unconstitutional acts have some consequences for the officials who do them. Right now, it is the duty of every constitutional officer to enforce the Constitution as they understand it. That is presently the state of affairs in governance in the United States. We're going to have to come to a new understanding through some formal mechanism to ensure punishment for people who deliberately and willfully violate the plain text of the Constitution. And right now, I don't know exactly how you're going to do that.
I'll give you another example. You know, on Sunday, Sarge, you had people standing on the east side of the Mississippi River saying, come over here and shop. On the west side of the Mississippi River in Missouri, say, you can't come over here and shop. Shopping on Sunday was illegal in Missouri. It was legal in Illinois. That ain't 100% of the population.
Mm-hmm. We got some stupid laws out there. Let's face it, folks. I'll be the first to say that because I didn't enforce a lot of these stupid-ass laws. It used to bug me to no end. But we need to do something about the people we put in office who pass these idiotic measures.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, if we don't recognize the right of each or every individual to, you know, petition for a redress of grievance and get remedy, you know, redress, then we're just continuing to give them power to run roughshod over us. We're denying our own individual sovereignty. If nobody has sovereignty, then the collective has no power. There's no authority if nobody has their sovereignty. You have to work by collective. That's nonsense.
But remember what I said earlier. Every single law that is passed, I don't care if it's a dog leash law, has the threat of force behind it, all of them. Without that, absent that, there is no rule of law. There cannot be.
But, Sarge, it's supposed to be a force of protecting the right and the inalienable rights and privileges that the Creator enabled us with. From the Declaration of Independence to realize it to the letter of the law through the Constitution, upholding that spirit, holding promise.
And you
got
to leave that to every individual citizen to decide for themselves.
Missouri was a dry state. Missouri was a dry state. People wanted liquor on Sunday, so guess what they done? They went to Illinois and bought liquor and brought it back to their houses in Missouri. That's the way it is.
Look at Prohibition. Did that work very well? No. Did they try to enforce the law? Yeah. It was a big-ass failure. If people decide they want to disregard the law because the law is so bad, then that mass disobedience, not the disobedience of a few people, but mass disobedience like they had during the 20s and 30s under Prohibition, well, the authorities will throw their hands up and realize they didn't bit off more than they can chew. But that's pretty much what it's going to take. I mean, you can't, when most people assent to a law and say it's a good thing that we have this, that's not likely to happen. They're going to still want the authorities to enforce that law. And I'm going to remind you again, it is within their 10th Amendment right to do if the law in and of itself is not patently on its face, prima facie, unconstitutional.
I'll be the judge of that.
See, that's what I mean. Every individual gets to decide that result with no consequences. Now, I agree every individual should decide that for themselves, provided they are willing to accept the consequences of noncompliance. Then I would agree with that premise.
No, because you're denying them the even a right to be party to the decision that's being made. It's
free will. It's like with religion. You got a free will to sin. If you want to sin, you can sin. But they say there are consequences. I mean, if you believe in religion now, I don't want to argue the religious implications of this. I'm just giving an analogy. In the case of religion, you know, you got a free will right to sin if you want, but when you die, you got to accept the consequences for your sins. Similarly, if you decide a law is so onerous and anti-liberty and unconstitutional that you cannot in good conscience comply with it, then simply be prepared to accept the consequences for it, because whether it should or shouldn't be, they will ensue.
Anybody that's masturbated has sinned.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, thanks a lot there, Bianca. We appreciate that.
I'm pretty sure there's still some states that make it illegal. So not only did you sin, but you broke the law because you masturbated.
But rest assured, though, John Doe, I do share your discomfort with a lot of these dumbass laws. I ain't even going to try to argue for a bunch of them. Like I said, if I was the emperor of the United States for a day and they did disregard the Constitution, give me supreme power for a day by a constitutional amendment, I'd get rid of probably at least 40% of the laws on the book. That's at the federal and state level.
Maybe more. If the way that you guys are fighting for the right of the oligarchy to continue to have power and run rust over the rest of us, then I ought to just get in with the elitist and start forcing everybody can't smoke, they can't drink alcohol or even Cokes, you know, beverages, and they can't eat junk food. We'll get rid of it all. But you don't want to live like that.
Well, why do you vote for the oligarchy?
I don't vote for that. You are telling me I was voting for it.
We're not talking about you in particular. We're talking
you
about
said
this.
The word you. Why do you vote for
you
all?
You meant a general you, not a specific you. You meant a general.
Why does this superficial group continue to vote for an oligarchy?
Yeah.
Well, because the corrupt system process that's been hoodwinked into the Stockholm Syndrome minds of the people. That's allowing it, because whenever I try to talk, I get people like you that defend them.
No, we're not defending them at all. No. We're not defending them, please. I don't know where you got that impression.
Well,
we're defending the rule of law and the system set up under the Constitution for the people to legislate in affairs, not forbidden by them to legislate in the 10th Amendment. That's what we're defending. We're not defending
Sarge.
These idiots who passed these laws.
Sarge, I respectfully disagree. You're not upholding the Constitution. You're perverting the interpretation. When you deny the individual the right to redress of grievance, you're creating a favored class. That's a caste system and a socialist
denies.
When you take
– no.
You're denying
nobody's
them
denying.
Their individual right to self-determine their own burdens, encumbrances, and obligation and forcing them into a collective system. Therefore, you are pushing socialism, and that's not constitutional
and
either.
I think what you are advocating is advocating a system wherein a small minority can veto the rights of the collective people to legislate in manners that the Constitution allows them to legislate in. And that is every bit as tyrannical as the form.
And then, too, what
not
you're saying is that you also forget that people got a right to associate or disassociate. They have a right to participate or not participate. That goes against
that.
This whole theory about 100% participation. It's not going to ever be. Because no matter how good it sounds, you're going to have those that say, I don't want nothing to do with that.
Bianchi, I never said 100% of participation. You know I tried to explain that earlier, and I don't know why you're throwing that back up like as if I'm saying that. But, I mean, the point of it is every individual citizen has the right to self-determine their own burdens, encumbrances, and obligation. Otherwise, we do not have a society of independent, self-governing, free people per the Declaration of Independence.
They
it's an
right.
oligarchical. It's an oligarchical caste system with favoritism levels, differing levels, where certain people are higher nobility privileged than others, and the people that get into the higher nobility privilege are able to pull the levers of government to force their will on the rest of you, and your redress of grievance, whether you petition with one or however many, it doesn't matter, unless you can get a super bunch of people
yeah,
to rush.
But John Doe, right now, poll after poll shows that 80% of the American people want some form of control at the border, southern border of the United States. 20% or so of the people think that the country ought to be wide open. We ought to have open borders. And it looks like that small minority with this stupid president administration we got is prevailing over the majority of people who want the borders regulated and controlled. Again, we've got another form of tyranny of the minority over the majority. See, that's what I mean. I do not think that when people are allowed to legislate in those areas that the Constitution allows them to legislate in, a small minority of people who disagree with it should have veto over it and then be allowed to disregard those laws with impunity. That is anarchy by definition.
I agree with you in the general context of what you just described. Can we dig a little deeper? May I?
Yeah, go ahead. Elaborate. That's what this discussion is all about. I want to hear every possible ramification. Please, elaborate.
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to provide you with every possible ramification as you so see it in your mind, but I look at it from this standpoint, and I agree with what you just said. In the context of how it becomes destructive in the sense that these particular people in power are, you know, this little oligarchy of dictators are pushing their will to get rid of the border, well, they've hoodwinked by Stockholm Syndrome so many of Americans into believing that it's okay to bring all these foreigners in here because these Americans who are benefiting from the foreigners coming in here don't care about the rest of the citizens who are being railroaded by the system. Because whenever you have American citizens who have the same right of self-determining the burdens, encumbrances, and obligations, and then they realize that the people who are pulling the levers in the system are allowing others to come in and run roughshod over them, then they've been deprived of the same right of decision-making as the others are exercising. So they've circumvented these people's private property. So all of our fellow Americans like you and me that pay taxes, supposed taxes, I'm not going to get into the Joe Gibson knows the story about taxes, and you've heard me talk about it too, but I'm trying to work with what we do understand from a certain practical level without going into a whole nother conversation of that scam, which is also a scam. But anyway, yeah. The point of it is we've got all these people on the public dole that you and I are supposedly paying for through our taxes. Well, they actually keep taking money from us in that con scam, telling us that we're helping pay for the disenfranchiser, unfortunate, and the homeless, and the people in these shelters and whatnot. Okay, number one, you and I have a right to say no. We cannot allow a single foreigner come into our country till we get all of these other citizens off the public dole and we not having to help support them with taxes. And then the citizens who are on the public dole are living in the tents or out on the street and under the bridges or out of their car or in the homeless shelters or whatnot. They're being defrauded out of their right to have mutual assent in the decision-making of this also. So they're on the take, though, in the sense that they might be on unemployment or some form of food stamps or SNAP or whatnot, but then there's a whole other group that ain't getting any benefits from SNAP or food stamps or whatnot, but they're living in the ditches and among the tents too, and they're just not getting heard, and they're being deprived of their right to have their will mutually and reciprocally included in this decision too. So they're being defrauded, so that's not constitutional, so therefore the people that disagree with that have a right to say, no, I'm not going to be obedient to it. I'll build as many walls or do what I want on the border, and if you oligarchy of crooked nonsense people that are supposedly using our tax dollars to tear down these walls, then we have a right to self-defense to fight you if you ain't going to talk reasonably and understand how our fellow man's being defrauded out of his privileges and immunities. Does that make sense, or am I bad not communicating?
No, that
clearly
don't make sense. It don't, because these people ain't going to bust a grape. That's the reason why. And it's going to go back around again.
What do you mean by bust a grape?
Defense. That's what I'm talking about. And we're going to go back around, and we're going to visit this oligarchy. Well, you vote for the oligarchy. Then we're going to go back around.
I'm not voting for the oligarchy.
I'm not talking about you. Apparently somebody is. They get elected.
Well, if you believe elections are not rigged,
there we go again. Now they didn't get elected by immaculate conception. Somebody came out and voted
implying for it. You're implying that the elections are all legitimate. But anyway, I get your point. Go ahead with your point, Bianchi.
And then, and that's the case. And you got the power to remove them, but you don't use them. The people that voted them in or didn't vote them in, matter of fact, got the power to remove them, but they don't use that power. So maybe they're okay with it.
But, Bianchi, they're forced into a collective socialist system that they don't want to be in. They would be happy to have mutual assent.
Well,
but they're not allowed that.
the best way to get out of something you don't want to be in is do 180 and go the other direction and make changes.
But they
so
aren't going to allow you to not be in it. They're going to force the system on you.
That is not true. If you decide that you don't want to be in it, you got a process to go by to not be in it, and it works. It works. But you got to initiate it.
Okay, can you be here every Saturday so all of us that need to understand how this works, that you'll explain it to us? Because there's a whole lot of people that really need the help.
I tell you what, I
but you said
you
it works, and I don't
I
know what
you
what is working
you
that you say
you
does work. So if you know it
you
works,
me
then
tell
we need
you,
the
I'll
help. We need the help that you can provide because you know how it works.
I'm gonna tell you how to do it like I did. They got something called libraries. All that information is in libraries, in volume after volume after volume. That's how you learn. I can't teach everybody. Ain't got time to be doing that. Go to the library and use your free will to learn it yourself. It's not hidden in the book. You got to open up to the right page in order to find it and read and understand it.
Bianchi, I already learned what I learned, and the reason why it doesn't go very far is because too many people that think the way you and Sarge think are holding up the hands of the doggone crooks to keep having that exclusive power over the rest of us.
The reason why it haven't went far enough because you got too many people that don't think like you.
It's hard to get people like you to understand how to think like me. I'm doing the best I know how, but I'm not good enough yet. But I'm working at it,
well,
and I'll still love
why,
on you. I'll
why,
keep loving on
you
everybody
been,
can.
Yeah, but that, John Doe, that's why I've been asking you so many questions to flesh out your beliefs so I can understand them better. That's why I ask you to give me specifics when it comes to these things. Will you give us? You do give us, quite articulately, your general statement of principle. We get that. But in order to have a more concrete understanding, we need something that's specific. What are particularly egregious examples of these transgressions of your liberties that you are mostly complaining about? And when you are specific, it helps us to concretize it better in our mind. That's all we're asking. We're not ignoring what you're saying. We are listening to what you're saying, and we're responding to it. We're not ignoring it at all.
Hey, I know
you're
not. I appreciate that.
You got to have the grievance.
Hey, Sarge,
I don't know what your grievance is. Are you mad because you got a ticket for driving 40 in the 35? That's a grievance.
No,
how do you follow
that? I really don't have much of a problem with this stuff other than the fact that I see a lot of my fellow Americans struggling and hurting, and the system continues to rape, pillage, and plunder them, and I don't have all the resources to provide for them, but I see how the system is corrupt. In order for them to be able to get back on their feet and live a life worth living, and therefore the whole system works better when each person feels like that they got invested into the system and they got a life worth living, it works better for everybody. But as long as the system keeps allowing these oligarchy of small-minded dictators to consolidate power to these bureaucracies and these different people in these certain positions, and then they get to run roughshod over the rest of us and pick favorites of who they give remedy or redress on their grievances to, then we're just empowering the Hitler mentality crooks to continue to do the Mossy tongue tricks on us and the Napoleon tricks on us.
I'm getting ready to go make me a tuna fish sandwich. I'll be right back.
The first step is to get the money out of politics.
How is money a bad thing in politics?
Well, because each individual, whether they're Democrat or Republican, they have to raise so much money. And it's not just for their election. And it goes, say, Republicans. It goes to the RNC, and then it gets distributed back down, just like our taxes. Pay my taxes here in Gaines Township. That goes to Genesee County. That goes to the state of Michigan. Then it goes to the federal government. And then the federal government divides up and decides how much we get to keep of our local taxes. So it gets spread back down to the state of Michigan. State of Michigan distributes how they see fit. And then down to the county. And then down to my township. And We could be paying a ton of taxes and get what we want done here, but we have to send our money to Genesee County. It gets distributed across, and we've got Flint in Genesee County, which is a big need. And so Flint gets more of the money than what like Gaines Township gets. So it's you get the money out. They don't have to raise money to get elected. They only have to raise money to get themselves elected. It's up to the RNC itself to go around. And that's the people that are not in office. That's the people that are running just the RNC. They can go ahead and raise their money.
And I understand the problem with money in politics. Money is definitely corrupt. Now, there's no doubt about that. I guess the devil's in the detail. And that's what concerns me whenever I hear anybody saying they want to get the money out of politics, because the devil's always in the detail. How do you restrict the amount of money from whom? Now, it would seem to me as if the best avenue is transparency, so I know who's giving money to what candidate. Because if you're going to restrict the amount of money a candidate can raise, that would mean the people cannot exercise their ability to influence the election by contributing whatever amount they want to the candidate who they think will best petition for their redress of grievances. That's the purpose of electing a representative.
That's where my one, this is only a little idea, and it's just started, so I'm going to have to flesh it out a lot more. But say John Doe is here in Gaines Township, and he's on the board. He's president of the – he raises money. If he raises money as a Republican, say I give him money, half of my money will be considered going to him, and half my money would be considered going to RNC. So say you've got a big lobbyist comes in, and he comes in and he talks to John Doe and says, hey, I want this land right here. I want it judged as commercial. I can donate, you know. So he donates to the RNC, not to John Doe directly. John Doe gets the points from the RNC for making, you know, raising the amount that they want him to raise. But it's never on John Doe that he got this money from this particular person. So when John Doe goes ahead and approves what this particular person wanted, there's fogginess in there. They can go, oh, I was giving it to the RNC. I wasn't giving it to John Doe. I was doing this. I was doing that. That's where we can get more transparency. Each individual person that wants to run for office raises their money for themselves. And then the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, the whole machine behind it, because they're not in office, they can go around and talk to the lobbyists. They can go around and talk to this person, that person, and get out the big money themselves. Do not make the person that's in office or running for office do that, because then they're beholden. And there's not exactly a paper trail there that shows, oh, he just got bought.
Okay, so I think, is it fair to say then that your concern is more with transparency than with the actual amount of money that's being donated?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, then I agree with that then.
Because say GM wants to go ahead and do it. GM can go ahead and donate to Doe, and he would donate. They'll donate, because when you're smaller, there's only so much you can donate to a thing. There's a cap. But because they're talking to John Doe, they say, okay, we're gonna send this rest of this amount to RNC. Well, then John Doe's going, hey, I just got kudos for bringing in, you know, a whale into everything and getting our coffers up. So I owe this guy. Well, if you look at it transparently, he's not going to owe GM for giving him $2,500, the $2,500 limit.
Okay. Can I comment?
Okay. Yeah, you can.
Can I be next? I got my hand up.
Go for it.
Yeah, here's the fulcrum point that I think is
I don't even know how to word it. But anyway, at the point, I'm going to try to stick with your same scenario, Cinnamon, and I appreciate this. Well, I mean, what you're saying, because I agree with you. We do have problems. But at the point that I'm going out here, just because you said people were talking to me like I was a congressman or a senator. But so these people are talking to me, and now I pass a law, but because there's real no association with me and that money, then there's no accountability or there's no way to really trace it back to me as if I'm doing quid pro quo favors.
Yes.
But if you had the right to have your redress of grievance, it wouldn't matter how much money's in the system nor how many bills I pass, because you could say there's a problem here. You're denying, abridging, and impinging on my pursuit of happiness, so therefore that law needs to go, or that rule or statute or whatever it was that I passed on behalf of that beneficiary, it wouldn't stand.
Well,
so it
okay.
wouldn't matter how much money's in there or not. You see what I mean? Because they couldn't
yeah.
hold you accountable to it. Because you have a right of redress, and you get to stand on your own decision-making of what burdens, encumbers, and obligations of governing are on you.
I'll give you a real-life scenario that's going on. We have out here where we've got little townships, small cities. So there's a lot of farmland. Well, you know how farmland is going now. It's hard for smaller family farms to even stay afloat. So they've got an area that's outside of Swartz Creek, outside of Monday Township, outside of Flint Township, I believe. And they want to do a mega site. And a mega site is setting up a whole... not setting up just a car factory, they're setting up a whole complex. Now, most of the people, when it went through to get approved for the mega site, a whole bunch of people said, oh, no, because a big thing here is we're on well water. Most of the people are on well water. And part of the mega site is they get, you know, they get to draw from the aquifer a lot. And it was to build EV batteries. So they looked it up, and they could tell that even though they're supposed to treat the water before they release the water back, it's really hard to completely clean the water. We here outside of Linden in Mundy Township had a factory that was getting rid of wastewater and pollution, and they polluted the aquifer, and the site got shut down. I mean, it was chain linked for 20 years. It was just an overgrown area. A friend of mine bought a house that was right next door to it, didn't realize it. And she had a son that was sick and continued to get worse until they found out that they were right next to that site. Anyway, it takes forever for them to clean up the site. They're still going after GM to clean up one of their sites. So everybody got together, started doing these petitions, and they took it to the township board. And the township board said, well, we can't do anything about it because you didn't do the petition the right way. So, you know, try again. Right now, they don't have to try again. They're going to, because... that doesn't mean that we were one of the people for the EV battery. They chose a site in Indiana. So we're not battling against that one in particular. But now that they got it okayed for this mega site, now they're going through and they're working on it. So they got over enough signatures. And the guy said, well, can we just tell you what our problems are with this? You see how many people have signed this. Let me just tell you what we're against. And they wouldn't listen to them. So now they're going through and doing the petition the right way, correcting what they did wrong and going through it. But it's one of those real life things. I think he had 4,500 signatures, and that was in a 2-week period. So it was a big thing that he was, you know, these people were doing. And they just refused to listen to him. And so that's what his thing was. He said, okay, so who's lining the pockets? Oh, we're going to get all these jobs and we're going to get this and that. You know. So we'll see how it comes out. So they're doing, you know, their grievances, and we'll see how it ends up. But it's a real life thing. If I'm from a small township that only has, you know, say 5,000 people, and the one right next to me only has 3,000 people, and between those two groups of people, you get 4,500 people saying, no, we don't want this. And they've all signed, you know, put their signatures down. You're going to at least listen to them, right? But obviously not. There was some kind of money going on in the background, which they're trying to find.
Yeah, the greed and the people that are going to benefit from that greed, they're going to get their little palms greased. They're fighting to keep them going, and the other people that feel they're getting run roughshod over, they're the ones filing for grievances. So
yeah.
the point is, we got to go beyond that, in my humble opinion, in determining whether whatever's going to be done at this water system, is it harming any of the people that are filing grievances? Because it's in the people who want to do something, they should be free to do it as long as they're not encroaching or harming other people, you know, encroaching on other people's rights and privileges. But, you know, without knowing, like Sarge is saying, understanding the details, and to one person, this is where it gets sticky. You know, if I'm just upset in my emotions because you drive a fancy certain kind of car that I, or whatever kind of car it is I don't like, well, does that justify me being able to use the government to say that you're guilty of hurting me and harming me? And that's, you know, that's the tricky part that I'm hoping we can figure out in our conversations that we never get to.
Yeah.
The general principle is that if anybody is wanting to do something and then they're brought into the government system in order to do it, they should be able to do it as long as they're not infringing on other people's rights, privileges, immunities, protections, and benefits, or harming them. Otherwise, they're innocent until proven guilty and they get to do it. But we got to prove that they're harmful, and that's a tricky harm thing to do. Especially, we learn after the fact in a lot of these manufacturing places, they pollute the water. Well, then now you're arguing on, well, what amount of pollution is actually pollution or not, or bad for you, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And I mean, that's a tricky thing. It's tough, but I've got to try to push us all back to the point of, hey, are we going to treat each other the way we want to be treated? And if that's the fact, and what they do is using the government to beat me down, then they should expect me to exercise self-defense and use whatever weapons I can get my hands on in order to stop them from using the weapons they're using.
Yeah, I think if we just get a lot more transparency in our government, and wasn't it Obama that said